former defensive lineman turned author, Israel Adonijay. From the NRDC, Josh Mogerman. And we play The Worst with comedians Kristen Toomey and Rena Kahl. Now, here's your host, a man who is a defensive lineman turned talk show host, Justin Kaufman.
Well, I might have embellished a little bit of my resume. I never played defensive lineman, so take that part out. So he's a non-defensive lineman who became talk show host. Or how about regular guy who becomes talk show host? Or how about way out of shape guy who became talk show host? Is that, I think that works, yeah. Can we redo it? Oh, we can't? That's okay. You know, I do have a history of, you know, I may not have ever played the game of football, but I definitely like to watch it. And I also am pretty good at Madden. So maybe I can give Adonijay a couple of pointers on some of the things that maybe went wrong in his career where I've realized with my pointer at home, I could see he wasn't squaring up. I could see he was not squaring up. Of course, I'm joking. How's everybody doing? It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We have an awesome show lined up tonight, and I am ready to power through. Man, it's been a long day, Pete. I was here this morning I was on Steve Cochran, as Steve was very gracious. I've been talking about it on the show, but we had the fourth grade field day today, or field trip. And they came in, and I had talked to Steve and Mary about, you know, they're going to come through. They went upstairs to the terrace. And I was like, can they just come through and they just observe, you know, just stand along the walls of the studio here. Then I get here a little bit early. It's like 9:15. They're not here yet on the bus. And I hear Steve saying, coming up, we got some fourth graders who are in the green room, and they will be here. They're going to be next up here on the Steve Cochran Show. I'm like, oh.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if you really want to do that. And then my favorite part of the whole thing was that the segment that we observed was a cocktail segment. The guys from Maroon doing healthy cocktails for the summer. So he's talking about gin and he's mixology, and all the fourth graders just kind of watching. It was pretty funny, dude. It was funny. Great. I was just like, that looks good and it's not for you. And don't ever drink this until you're 21 years old. But it was fun. It was great, and to have the kids here and for them to be so bored.
They were bored?
No, they weren't bored. They really enjoyed it. But what they really want, you know, if you're on a field trip, you want activity. Right. They want to be stuff on the radio. They want to host the radio. They want to, you know, flip the switches, turn the lights on and off, do things. And everything, you know, a field trip to WGN is just shh, shh.
Yeah,
don't
that's
talk.
True.
Shh.
Yeah.
Watch these guys read. Live reads. Shh. This commercial is going to be great. Shh.
Yeah, it's not quite
the
like
best
going
part,
like Great America or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Do you get a field trip in Great America? I guess that was a field trip. The best part by far was going up on the terrace here at the Trib Tower up on the 22nd floor. They've got like a little spot you can go up. And the kids, there were some kids that were just like, they were so dramatic. I love them all. They're so dramatic, like, oh, it's so high up. Oh, I've never been on an elevator before. And that kind of stuff. I'm like, and I'm just, it's when you like, you make that transition from parent to like peer with a fourth grader, you calm down. You give them a look. You're just like, all right, you know what? It's not the biggest thing in the world. And you're going to have to learn sooner or later to ride an elevator. And so they were able to do it. And then they got up there and they got to see the skyline from every direction, which is pretty cool. And then I said, you got to get out. And then I was right at the end, it came down, and this is such a sad story, but it's worked out well. But we came down, and security's like, hey, Justin, there's one more.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, what?
A lost kid?
Yeah, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Did I forget? And she was late. She missed the bus at the school, and the dad drove her over here. But when they got to the lobby, we were already upstairs, so she didn't get a chance to go on the tour. So she was really kind of broken up. You know, she was really sad. So I'm like, all right, come on. So I brought her in. At this point, it was Bill and Wendy were on. And she came in, and Jim O'Hare, who's going to be on the show tomorrow night, or Thursday night, or tomorrow night, I can't remember what it is, but he was on Bill and Wendy this morning. And so she kind of recognized him because, you know, Jim's was on Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
And this little girl was right when the break happened, and she got Wendy Snyder and Bill Leff and Jim O'Hare to talk, and they were asking her questions, and it was a lot better than the rest of the class that just kind of got the –
pays as being late sometimes.
Yeah, pays being late. So there you go. So
they're going to say, like, she just had to sit in the lobby and read all the Yeah. You know, all the sayings from Benjamin Franklin and whatnot.
It was funny. Last night, I realized, I'm like, you know, maybe, because I was talking to one of the parents, too, like, maybe we could do, like, a research project where they have to take down one of the quotes and do something about it. And I was like, yeah, or we'll just walk around one to two. Right? And last night when we were leaving here late night, I looked in the lobby and I'm like, I should probably know these. I work in this building now for 2.5 years. And I look at the, I start reading. I'm like, I've never read 75% of these.
Really?
Yeah. There's the ones that are in my sight line. And I'm like, oh, that's very, oh yeah, you insightful. But there's a big one like way up on the wall. If you're not familiar, the Tribune Tower here in Chicago downtown has a bunch of quotes from, you know, essentially about free press, really. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, just carved into the wall. It's really, really pretty. If you ever get a chance at Michigan Avenue and you haven't done it, sneak into the Trib Tower. And it's not against the rules. You can come into the lobby. They do tours and things like that.
Yeah.
But you can see on the marble walls quotes from the past, from leaders, you know, people who've worked in newspapers before, things like that. It's really inspiring. But I looked up and I'm like, huh, that's new.
They added a new one.
I'm like, when did they do this? As I turned to security. When this was this new? Is this fresh? Is this from ESPN Magazine? Oh, cool. All right.
I will say, if you do feel like you to come down and see it, because you should come, yeah, and look and take a tour of the lobby. Do it about 9 to 10. Yeah. Don't like muck up my lobby when I'm coming in, like at 1 or 2 or somewhere in between there.
Well, we always, during the day, we get a different type of crowd in here. But yeah, I would assume that that time, I mean, being here in the morning, it's funny how I forget. We rarely are here in the mornings. And being here, you know, downtown in this area is much different, you know, when you're sitting here at 9 o'clock than it is at 7 o'clock now. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we got a great show tonight. Josh Mogerman's back, the national media director at the NRDC. We'll talk about the environment. We got a lot to talk about. You know, I don't want to get into the, I talked to Josh a little bit today, just as we sort of tee up what we're going to talk about. And I kind of want to continue the conversation we had last night with Rebecca Huffman. We talked about service. With the environment, do you consider, Pete, the environment and the protections, the EPA, and what we do with funding from the government to be the public good? Do you consider that any environmental protections are in the zone that you cannot, that should be federally funded, don't mess with it?
Yes.
Because that's really what's on the line right now. The proposed Trump budget has gutting of the environmental protections we saw with the Paris Accords. There is definitely a statement that's coming out of Washington that they may not think that. That they may think, hey, the environment's important, but it's not federally funded important. That's not the role of the government. And we're going to talk to Josh about that, just like we said with service last night. Is it possible that you're getting cues from the government about what the future may look like of what is considered the public good? My thought is it's probably going to be military and that's it. But what does that mean? Do you start thinking rationally about a world in which there isn't federal funding for the EPA or for other places, and the private sector has to step up, the for-profit businesses? We kind of see that with clean energy. You know, they're not government-funded entities that get into solar energy or get into wind power. Yes, there are subsidies, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But they're making money off the fact that they're becoming an energy company. So it's just interesting to wonder if the environment, and if we can shift the paradigm, and I'm not trying to say that the environment's not important, but I'm saying, can you read the signals? Can you read the tea leaves that, you know, the federal government doesn't want to be in that business? And is it up to the people? Is it up to the way the consumers use energy? Is it up to, you know, us and local governments, taxes on how we protect our lakes and our waterways, things like that, the air around us? It's a fascinating question, and Josh Mogerman and I will toss it around tonight. Speaking of tossing it around, Israel Adonijay. He's a defensive player. That didn't work. If he was a receiver or quarterback, that would work. The defensive lineman for the Chicago Bears has turned author. He's written comic books in the past, and now he's taken his pen, and he is really going for a new audience, maybe that one that doesn't necessarily know him from the gridiron, but a young audience, 2 to 6-year-olds. We'll talk to him about self-worth, self-confidence, and what he's trying to do with his written work. Israel Adonijay is going to be at Lit Fest. We'll talk to him at the 8 o'clock hour. My guest at the big table will stretch out for the hour. 9 o'clock, we'll talk about diversity in comedy. Deanna Irons Griffin will be here. I'm very excited to have her. I love her. She is the outreach coordinator for diversity at Second City. They got the big breakout comedy festival, the third annual, that's coming up this weekend, so we'll talk to her about that. Also, hip-hop artist, which I'm very excited to have, FemDot. He's a hometown hero. The kid is, I mean, what, 21 years old, 22 years old? Once again, Pete, here we go. These kids that are doing much more than we ever did. Going to be playing at Metro for the Red Bull Sound Select coming up on Thursday. So we'll talk with them tonight. And we'll play The Worst, Rena Kalm and Kristen Toomey in studio tonight. So excited. All right, news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Liam. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, do the carryout. Stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We got a big show tonight, so let's get to it. We'll start with the carryout, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. All right, here are today's top stories. News is leaking out of the White House like oil from an old Chevy Cavalier. Unsubstantiated reports say that the Attorney General Jeff Sessions is willing to resign if President Trump wants him to. This after Sean Spicer said nothing about it, which is something. And after the president went to Twitter to complain about the new travel ban and how the Justice Department should have pushed for the old. You know what? It's just like one big Apprentice episode, isn't it? It really is. Like, you're starting to see how it works here. I'm confused. Is President Trump going to live tweet his responses to the James Comey testimony on Thursday? Or is that just leftist propaganda? Or does everyone know that he's going to do it and there's nothing you can do to stop him? President Trump went to Twitter today to say that the fake mainstream media is trying to get him to stop using social media. What do you mean, like an intervention? Donald, we care about you. You have great ideas, but they just don't work in 140 characters. You're ruining this family by tweeting. Look at your thumbs. Look, the skin is so rough. Nobody wants you to stop tweeting. Well, maybe your Republican allies. But goofy tweeting? Yeah, I'd love to see it go away. But the mainstream media? No, they're making loot. So they definitely don't want you to stop. And I love that the president mentions Twitter as, quote, social media. Hey, you're more than welcome to stop using Twitter and just use Snapchat. I mean, late night snaps from the president play way better than late night tweets, right? Forbes has a big bombshell story that accused Eric Trump and the president of stealing money from sick kids. Well, it's more complicated than that, but you thought in your head for a second of a sick kid and then President Trump stealing his wallet, didn't you? Don't lie. No, this is a money laundering accusation where Eric Trump would have a big charity golf tournament. He'd pay money to his dad for the services, who in turn would use that money for other charities that serve his own business interests, including, ding, his campaign. It's a detailed article. Go ahead and read it. And it's Forbes, so you'll love the inspiring quotes from CEOs that pop up and block the articles. Pop-up ads that motivate. Brilliant. It's interesting because even if Eric Trump paid full rate for all the Trump services, the golf course, catering, etc., he wouldn't be paying close to what he actually paid. Meaning, as President Trump got closer to running for president, the fees went up on that event to a staggering $320,000 for a golf tournament, up from $50,000 just a couple years before, which was up from zero when Eric Trump started because it's a charity. Does anybody care? No? Or is it just more partisan garbage from that alt-left Bernie Sanders pandering Forbes? Get a job, Forbes! We're finding out more about the accused leaker in the NSA Russian hacking memo. Her name is Reality Winner, and she's from a... Really? That's her name? Her name is Reality Winner? Am I missing something? Is that what we're calling her? That's her nickname? Or is that... That's her real name. Wow. We've hit rock bottom on names. This is really... This is the moment of clarity. Anyway, she's become a lightning rod for government versus whistleblowers. On one hand, she works for the government. It's illegal to disseminate classified information. And on the other hand, did this memo have the government saying that Russia did try to hack the elections? Was that going to come out, or was the government just going to be like, nah, no one needs that? Tough call here. Reality's lawyer, I can't even. That's her name. Her lawyer says that the government may have interrogated her without a lawyer for confession and wonders aloud if going after a low-level government employee is just political theater. Well, one thing's for certain, that is a really dumb name. Reality Winner, which is, I mean, it's perfect for White House Apprentice, right? Fits right in. All right, what else have we got today? Today, the Goodman Theater let us know that Stacy Keach had a heart attack during his performance in Pamplona. They had to end the show early and send everybody home. Keach is recuperating, but damn, that could have gone all sorts of wrong, right? I mean, who would have helped? They would have thought he was acting. Bravo! Glad he's on the mend, but wow. In weather, to quote Matthew McConaughey, real nice. In sports, the Cubs keep on keeping, winning their fourth in a row last night to almost erase the bad taste in our mouths from the California trip. Almost. They go again tonight against the Marlins. They got the Rockies coming to town for a big showdown starting on Thursday tonight. Arrieta and his tight uniform on the mound. Is it me or it seems like it's getting tighter? He's the one guy in baseball where I'm like, nah, he doesn't look like a pitcher. There's something, I don't know what it is about his uniform, but it makes it look like, oh, this wrestler is pitching now. Good. The White Sox are in Tampa Bay. Good news for the Sox, since they were off yesterday and the Royals lost, they move a half game up on the Royals for last place. So it's clear, it's better when the Sox don't play. Oh, come on now. I'm a Sox fan, which is why I can be harsh on my guys. They need a big week to get back into our good graces after a miserable weekend in Detroit. Standing in their way, of course, the Tampa Bay Rays used to be the Devil Rays. Who the Rays? Who plays on the Rays these days? Evan Longoria, sure, but after that, who's on the squad? Fred McGriff, still playing first? Anybody else? This team is too boring to get chuckles. I mean, they started in 1998. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to name some 80s Buccaneers. Steve DeBerg still playing quarterback? Is Vinny Testaverde on this team? Donald Igwe-Wikwe kicking for the Bucks/Rays? No? Another day off for the Cavs Warriors. Yep. They need to milk it because this thing's going to be over by the weekend. So slow it down. Stretch it out. Let's have Barkley do hockey halftime. Stretch it out. And how about those Predators, huh? Tied it up. Back to Pittsburgh. We got a series. Good job, guys. The Bears are back at work today. And good news, Pernell McPhee says he's healthy after a battle with a knee injury all of last year. Good. We can finally start working on that Nanny McPhee poster. All right, imagine this. He's in his uniform with an apron on. He's vacuuming the living room. He's doing housework while holding up petulant quarterbacks. Right? He's Nanny McPhee. Don't lie. That's the best idea you've ever heard. Come on. Who's with me? Where's there no venture capitalists out there that want to get in the poster business? I've got ideas. Also, Mitch Trubisky is the only Bears draft pick who hasn't signed yet. Yikes. Delightful. Delightful. Let's get that done. And finally tonight, a new study says that playing video games could be good for young people who develop better mental adaptability skills, which is code for, I don't really have to be to work till 9:30, so I could play one more game. That's the carryout for June 6, 2017. Hey, enjoy your pizza. You like Parmesan cheese and sealed packets? Oh, man, do I have a treat for you. All right, coming up, Josh Mogerman's going to join us. We'll talk environment at 8 o'clock. Israel Adonijay, the former Chicago Bears defensive lineman, has turned author. He's going to be at LitFest, and he's going to talk about his new work. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
You mentioned former Tampa Bay quarterback Vinny Testaverde. He also played for a couple of other clubs, but
yeah, right.
I've got a quick little story about him here in just a second. But you also mentioned the Tampa Bay Rays roster.
Yeah.
The White Sox in action against the Rays in Tampa Bay tonight. The only other person that I can recognize in their lineup is Ricky Weeks.
He's on the team. Ricky Weeks is
That's
on the
That's the only
Rays?
Other person I that I could recognize. Next to Evan Longoria, Ricky Weeks is the only name that I recognize.
Well, who do they have? They probably got a Jeff Dickerson out there, maybe a Sousa. Is there a Sousa on that
Sousa
team?
Sousa Jr. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Colby Rasmus.
I only know these guys from playing fantasy baseball and pouring over the waiver wire when I'm like, this season's going south. One of these guys got to hit a home run, right?
So it's quickly about Vinny Testaverde, yeah. I was at one point in time in my adult life in guest relations and marketing at Walt Disney World in Florida.
Wow. Okay.
One of my functions was to provide VIP tours to VIPs that came through the park. Vinny Testaverde was one of those guys.
Yeah, was he a nice guy?
Super nice. He was down there competing in the made-for-TV NFL QB challenge,
sure,
you know, that they tape
course.
And then
yeah,
they run,
sure,
you know, in the middle of the night. But very nice guy.
What was the hairstyle at that time? Was it perm? Was it long perm?
Still perm. He shortened it up a little bit
in
the back. Yeah,
good.
Yeah, because
okay,
we were in the mid-90s then, so. But he looked good. Very nice guy.
It was definitely a... definitely brought on a lot of the sort of styles of the 80s. Like, he's a long perm guy. I like that.
Yeah.
I like
yeah,
that. All right. Well, that's great.
There you go.
All right. There you go. I'm glad I could jog some of those memories for you, Rob.
Taking a trip down Amnesia Lane.
All right. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up 8 o'clock, Israel Adonijé joins me, the former defensive lineman for the Chicago Bears. Now an author. He's going to be at Lit Fest coming up here this weekend, so we'll talk to him about his new books for kids, and we'll talk to him about life after football, Israel Adonijé, tonight and the 8 o'clock hour. Well, a lot going on in Washington these days when it comes to the environment. The president and EPA director Scott Pruitt seem to have made it a top priority to change the course on issues that are affecting this planet. And that means a gutting of the EPA and the new proposed federal budget. And, of course, President Trump's announcement late last week that he would be pulling the United States out of the Paris Accords on climate change. So what's it all mean? Is it the work of a new administration that shows contempt and even disdain for climate science? Or is it another indication that President Trump has different ideas on how we should be approaching any issue that is categorized in the, quote, public good? Back in studio tonight, National Media Director for the NRDC, Josh Mogerman, here to talk about how those moves may affect the Midwest and Chicago. Josh, great to see you. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, so first let's do this so we can get it out of the way. I feel like every time we talk, and we've had numerous conversations, it all goes back to sewage in the river. I feel like that's where we start. And lo and behold, here we are again with this idea of sewage in the river and how the Paris Accords could affect that.
Poo in the water is like my career. I feel like it's all I talk about. So you know, we're talking this week about the departure from the Paris Accord, and that is, despite what some of the folks in the administration want to say, is an agreement that is all about climate change. And we've got some new, interesting, somewhat scary numbers that have come out in the last couple weeks that show climate change here in Chicago. And it's a big number. It's 33 billion. That's the number of gallons of contaminated Chicago River water that have gone into Lake Michigan in the last 10 years. And I think your astute listeners will say, wait a minute, the Chicago River flows away from the lake. What's the deal? And that's where climate change comes in. We've seen this thing happen on a fairly regular basis where we get these huge, intense rainstorms. It's what the climate scientists. Scientists have said. We'll get the same amount of rain. It'll just come in these more intense storms. So the storms hit. We get lots and lots of rain hitting. It goes into the sewer system. Our sewer system gets backed up, and the water all goes into the Chicago River.
Right.
What's fascinating in all of this is, you know, 100 years ago, when they reversed the Chicago River to flow away from Lake Michigan to keep all of our poo and contamination from going into our drinking water source, they thought they had it covered. The basic idea was water runs downhill. And so you dig the canals away from the lake and you make them go deeper and deeper and the water flows and it worked. But what we're finding more and more is that when we have these big storms, when the combined sewers dump into the river, the water level goes up. And lo and behold, water flows downhill. But yeah, in this case, it's because the river has raised to a level above the lake. And the Army Corps of Engineers actually right, has to open the locks.
Right. Then we hear that every time there's a storm, right?
We're having it at least once a year. For the last decade, it's been happening a little bit more than that. And if you look over the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District's history, that wasn't happening in the first part of the last century. This is a recent thing. That is climate change.
Beyond the idea of a Paris Accord, what is being done to address this at a Midwest level, even in the country? When you talk about the Great Lakes or you talk about the Chicago River and the fact that climate change here means wetter seasons, more rain, more intense rain. Mm-hmm. Is that on the radar of the EPA and the other people that work to save the environment or at least pay attention to these things?
Yeah, I think we have spent a lot of money in the city of Chicago to deal with alternative ways to capture the rain. You know, when you go to the top of City Hall, there's a green roof. The whole idea of a green roof is it captures rainwater and it holds it there and prevents it from going into the sewer system. Chicago was a leader in this. It's green infrastructure. Unfortunately, we haven't been spending as much on it lately. It's something that the city needs to do more of. My group actually sued the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District to force them to spend more money on this issue, because we need to start using things more than just the pumps and the tunnels that have gotten us by up till this point. We need some new thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard as a Chicagoan for years to be hearing about deep tunnel, talk about other ways that we're going to deal with runoff and floods, and it's a project that's been behind in budget, and now it's finished or it's partially completed, to get to the point where it's actually there, and then it's not doable or it's not sufficient, and we have to start thinking about new ways and resources. That's tough for I would assume that's tough for civic leaders, just a tough pill to swallow.
Absolutely. And you look at the investment that we've made in the river. I mean, you can look out the window here at the studio and you can see the edges of the Riverwalk. We are making the Chicago River a place where we are bringing tourists, a place where we are spending more time, and that infrastructure comes with costs. And I remember a few years ago when the first section of the Riverwalk went in, we had one of these big reversal floods, and there were photos of the Riverwalk covered in some sort of brown slime. I don't know what that was. This is a fixable problem, but we have to deal with what's at the root cause of it, and that is, let's do what we can to limit our carbon pollution, and let's do what we can to offset the worst outcomes of climate change. We're going to have to deal with it, but let's offset the worst things.
Josh Mogerman's in studio with me. He's at the NRDC. Okay, so what we're going to do, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and I want to talk about that, because I think everybody's in agreement that something has to be done about pollution, about climate change, the temperature rising, the water's rising. Whose role and responsibility is that? Because we've got a strong, clear signal from the Trump administration that they believe that the states should be involved in that this is not necessarily something the federal government needs to be in control of. But, you know, you'll argue that this is, you know, climate change and what we see with the water is the public good. So the federal government, that's the role. They should be funding this and supporting this. Josh Mogerman in studio. We'll talk more about that issue here on The Download. Stay with us. Josh Mogerman from the NRDC in studio tonight. Regular here on The Download. We're talking about environment. Of course, this has been a big couple weeks for the environment, what happened with the Trump administration, Donald Trump himself, the president, pulling out of the Paris Accord with on climate change. And then we also, you know, talking about the federal government. And it's a conversation we've had a lot on the show, Josh. And it's starting to sort of become a thread, and I like it. This idea of whether or not it is contempt and disdain for climate science and climate change, this idea you'll hear, and people will knee-jerk to say that the Trump administration or the people in charge of the EPA, they don't believe in climate change. They think it's a hoax. I don't think that's the argument we should be having. The argument is that it fundamentally is protecting the planet or protecting our environment and the industries related to the environment part of the, quote, public good. Now, you'll argue, I'm sure, that it is.
Yes.
Okay, you start. I mean, because that, it seems to me I'm getting signals from Washington, even the state of Illinois, from Bruce Rauner and company, that some of these things that we've considered to be the public good that we need to fund don't necessarily need to be funded and don't need to be given federal dollars, taxpayer dollars, and we have to find out other ways to fund it. Does the environment fall into that category?
We are, you know, the government has a role in looking after the public good. And, you know, we oftentimes hear people talking about we need to run the government like a business on a regular basis. I think with the Trump administration, you're starting to see some of the pitfalls that come from that. But one of the things that businesses do is they look at their return on investment and they look at opportunity costs. When you look at climate change, the problem of climate change, the opportunity costs, I mean, we were just talking about poo washing into our drinking water source.
Right.
That's small potatoes compared to what a lot of the things that we're seeing coming up. When you look at large chunks of the coast being flooded. When you look at heat waves that are reminiscent of what we saw here in Chicago in the 90s, you know, where we lost like 600 Chicagoans in one heat wave. When you look at those costs, and then you look at what we have been putting towards the problem and what it will cost us, there is no question that the costs of inaction far outweigh the costs of moving forward. The even better thing is, there are studies out there that point to the solution for all of this, moving forward with a clean energy economy, is a $7 trillion prospect. So not only—
private industry prospect.
Absolutely.
Right.
Not only are we costing ourselves misery, huge infrastructure costs, massive disruption to our economy, but we're also costing ourselves access to this massive, massive industry and economic opportunity that's based on technologies that we invented
everything
in the United States.
Everything that you said just about the idea that the planet is changing and there's cost of, I think everyone agrees with that. If you get to a certain point and you look at the federal government and you say every year there's an unbalanced budget, the state of Illinois is a great example, 700 plus days. There's a reason they're unbalanced. They don't have enough revenue that's coming in to pay for the expenses that are going out. And that you see that in the federal government as well, pension payments, military, things of that nature that are prioritized over the plan. Now, you can argue about prioritization all you want. But is there a way that something like environment can be regulated or to be funded, quote unquote, using that word, by the private sector? People get cheaper alternative energy sources from wind or solar or things that don't cause carbon emissions. Great. We're on our way without the government getting involved.
Well, look, I mean, there's a reason why we have a government sector and a business sector. The business of business is business.
Right.
You know, so the business is focused on how do we make a return? How do we have a profit? In a lot of cases, there is actually a legal responsibility to do what is in the best interest of your shareholders, not the greater good of our society. That's not to say that private industry and the business community can't do a lot to help fix this problem. In fact, they have to this point. But when you look at markets, when you look at the invisible hand can be guided. And right now, the invisible hand is not guided towards maximizing
profit,
the transition
that we
need to move. It's guided towards the incumbent interests. It's guided towards fossil fuels. And, you know, frankly, they're not doing very well in this system already. There's only 51,000 coal miners in the United States now. That's not a function of the government making those jobs go away. That is economics.
But
that's
you see the government.
I mean, natural gas.
Flip the script a little bit, and you see the government in this case, you know, being influenced by lobby. Being influenced to say, we don't want to be in this accord because this can kill jobs. And that's been told to me by, we even see the EPA director having tight ties with the fossil fuel industry. So my question is, like, if you removed the government and the idea that there could be a lobby or there could be a fundamental push from an industry that does bad by the planet, isn't that argue to the idea that put it in business, put it in privates, let the private sector fund this stuff and get the government out of it so you get rid of corruption, you get rid of waste, you get rid of all the things that possibly are happening, possibly, allegedly, with, you know, the way that this administration is protecting certain industries.
But if you don't have government there to set up rules, business is, by definition, a special interest. Business looks out for business. If you don't have a cop on the beat in the government that is there setting the rules that everyone has to follow, then you have chaos, a whole bunch of entities looking out for themselves. And so there's this term that folks hear about in business school, externalities, the costs that come from a business. So if I have an oil refinery, like say the BP refinery on Lake Michigan, just over the border in Indiana, and I emit a whole bunch of sulfur chemicals that make people have breathing problems. But I do it within the limited confines of my pollution permits. I'm not breaking the law. Someone else is subsidizing that behavior, in this case, with their lungs, with their health. Those are costs that you and I take on. That's the public good. Government has an essential role to ensure that those externalities are addressed and to ensure that when people or businesses exceed or act in a way that is damaging the surrounding community, the government has to step in. If you don't have a cop on the beat, then got a mess.
That's the compelling argument. That's the argument right there that makes it different than what we talked about last night with service or what we talked mm-hmm. about the arts or culture. You get to a certain point where there needs to be a cop on the beat because business serves business, and dumping a bunch of stuff into our drinking water, they're going to do everything they can to not get in trouble for that.
Right? And that's not to say, again, that's not to say that business is somehow evil or wrong. You just have to have rules that frown on that sort of behavior and incentivize doing good things. A lot of the carbon reductions we've seen have come because of changes in market dynamics and emerging markets for clean energy. Government has a role in helping to set policies and priorities.
It's a great conversation. We'll continue it. Josh Mogerman, National Media Director at the NRDC here in Chicago. Josh, great to have you here. And when you come back next time, I will come up with some other stimulating hypotheticals to see how our planet is going to survive in 100, 200, 500 years from now. Josh, great to see you.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, Rob. Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin, broadcasting right here on Michigan Avenue tonight. Beautiful night. Coming up later in the show, we have a great show lined up. FemDot's going to be here. Young hip-hop artist, 21, 22 years old. I can ask him what age he is. He's opening up for the Red Bull Sound Select show this Thursday at Metro. It's great for him. We'll talk to him about his career. He just dropped a new EP. Also, Deanna Irons Griffin will be here. She is the director of outreach and diversity at the Second City. They got a big festival coming up about putting people on stage, diverse voices, people of color. They have a deal with NBC, and the NBC scouts come out and they come to see the Chicagoans here that don't look like the white dudes that are in improv that usually get that opportunity, right? So that's, we'll talk about that festival, which is coming up this weekend as well. That's going to be a big deal over there. Well, this weekend, Lit Fest takes over Printer's Row in the South Loop. An annual festival that's part book fair, part author speaker series. There's plenty of amazing writers in attendance, including my next guest, who you wouldn't necessarily expect to be at LitFest in Printer's Row. Instead, a few blocks east at Soldier Field, former Bears defensive lineman Israel Adonijé is done playing football, but he's taking the lessons he learned on the field and translating them to the written word. Adonijé will be at LitFest with his new series of books geared towards kids called The Dream Kids Adventures. The books, the two first books in the series are called I Love Football and I Love Me. And they are all about teaching self-worth and self-confidence to the 2 to 6-year-old range. I can't wait to ask about how those readings are going. Adonijé breaks the mold of jock. Yes, he played 11 years in the NFL, but he's created several businesses and products like his comic books called The Protectors and also IF Charities, which for the past decade has been raising money for charity in the Chicago region. A lot going on for the Chicagoan by way of Canada, by way of Nigeria. Israel Adonijé, my guest tonight at the big table. Good to see you. Thanks
hey,
for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So where does this come from, the idea? I mean, because I knew you had a comic book background. I know you share that with Lance Briggs and others on the team, team you played with. But where does the idea of creating a children's series come from?
Well, it really started my sister. I had 3 girls, you know, that are, you know, 2 to 5. And the comic is a little bit out of their, you know, reading level. So I wanted to create something for them. So I took some time to think, what did I want them to learn from whatever I wrote? And that was like the lessons of loving self and, you know, just coming from a place of love. I really think that love as a philosophy is a great foundation for all of us and really stands to make our world better. So that's where it all started. I wrote it actually as poems first. So I Love Me, a special kid with lots of gifts for all the world to see. From head to toe, my light will glow bright and beautifully. So I went through and I wrote these poems. I Love Me, I Love Numbers. And just then I created the characters. I kind of sketched what they'd look like, 6 characters in this elementary school environment. And then I found an incredible artist in Renzo RF, based out of Peru, who brought them to life in a fantastic way. And that's how it all started.
It's amazing. I mean, you don't think necessarily of you know, the business opportunities after the NFL. I mean, a lot of people who are going to be authors are going to write about their experiences, write about memoirs. Maybe they'll get into writing about certain issues, but But children's literature is not necessarily the first place I would think a defensive lineman playing the NFL would go. But, I mean, this idea of love and self-love especially, I mean, those are and you also talked, I mentioned self-confidence. At the core, that is what sport, football, yeah. team, those kind of things, at the core before you get to the big lights of Monday Night Football,
yeah.
that's what it's about.
Absolutely, and so many of the lessons learned in sport, football, I mean, for me, correlate and translate into success in life and you know, having great self-confidence and self-value is big in dealing with peer pressure. It's big with dealing with challenges and understanding that, you know, when you fall, you can get back up and you'll be okay. And there's the next play is still coming. And that, although you lost this game,
yeah, right.
you know, those things are invaluable lessons learned in sport. And you know, the goal is with these characters, with these stories, we hopefully can teach some kids those lessons and do it in an exciting way.
Were those lessons easy to come by for you? I mean, you're a big guy, big kid, yeah. I'm assuming, but I mean, you played sports at a young age. I mean, yeah. were these lessons, when you think back to your childhood, were they instilled in you? Were they things that you sort of valued and kept with you as you went on in your career?
Absolutely. I look back. I mean, basketball was my first passion. I was cut from my first basketball tryout. I didn't make the team. And you know, my parents, my father is not, well, he plays tennis, but football and basketball are like sports that he kind of looked down at, like, oh, you know, he wasn't interested in us playing those sports. But, you know, even though I got cut, my parents were like, you know, still go out there and go try. I ended up becoming the team's manager, so I kept all the stats on the sideline. Okay. Then by the end of the year, we had some injuries. I ended up getting on the court and playing grade 9. And by grade 11, 12, I was the captain of the team. So, you know, those lessons strengthen your resolve.
I mean, that lesson, and you hear that a lot with especially successful athletes, the idea that early on they felt they faced adversity. If you can take us to being in ninth grade, I mean, someone who might be listening right now had the same experience. I mean, talk about the roller coaster of emotions to not make the team. I mean, when we talk about the issues of self-confidence yeah. and self-worth, I mean, can you conjure up the sort of feelings, the anxiety, the fear, the things that were going through a ninth grader's head at that time?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think one, you know, to kind of, you know, make relevant the importance of your circle, you know, you don't want to go back. You want to quit. You know, you're sad. You're like all these things and the importance of having great parents or a great coach or a great uncle or aunt around you to say, hey, it's going to be okay. You know, keep working hard. You're going to be all right. Because I remember for me, that first, that basketball tryout, just so much anxiety. You step on the court. You don't really know anybody. It's something that you really want to do because I'd been playing every day after school, practicing, you know, dribbling between my legs, practicing my
right,
moves.
Right.
And now I'm grade 9. I'm going out to play to make this team, you know, and you know, you're doing this drills with all these other young men. And it's a stressful situation, you know, and it's not like I really knew anybody out there. So you go out there, you play, you try to compete. And towards the end of that you know, be told, oh, it was so close, you're almost there, but unfortunately, you know, we don't have an actual spot on the roster for you. And then, you know, but we like you, you're a good kid, you know,
right.
you can be the manager. You know, it's almost like, keep your manager job.
Right, right. I'm walking away.
Yeah.
I'm going to start drawing comics.
Right, right exactly. Right, I'm going to do something else,
right.
you know, but, you know, again, parents surroundings, like, you know what, do the manager job. You know, it's at the end of the day, you're going to learn so much from that position, and you're still going to be around a game that you love. Basketball was like my dream. You know, my parents made us write every day. We were only allowed to watch an hour of television, and in my journal I wrote when I was 13 that I wanted to play basketball for the Chicago Bulls.
This was in Canada?
That was in my dream in Canada, yeah. And so of the three things I wrote, I wanted to, one, my first dream was to play basketball for the Bulls. And for whatever reason, I thought Michael Jordan would still be playing when I was there. I was just
right.
like, I'm going to play with Michael
You're
Jordan.
Timeless, right?
And then I wanted to be a veterinarian. I love dogs. And I was like a dog geek.
Football was not in the equation.
Football
huh?
was not in
wow.
it. It was basketball. A child psychologist and a veterinarian.
Interesting.
Know?
All right. And here's what we'll do. Let's take a break. And because I want to come back and we can start fresh on how you were able to take the life lessons of your life and not only be able to you know, have them relate to how you're, what you're doing now, but also how you were able to make a transition and make it to the highest level of sport. Israel Adonijé, my guest in studio, 11-year vet of the NFL, played most of his career with the Chicago Bears right here in town. We'll take a quick break and we'll continue our conversation with Israel Adonijé. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest at the big table tonight, Israel Adonijé, the longtime Chicago Bear defensive lineman who now is an author. He was a comic book author before, but now he's got the Dream Kids Adventures. The books, the two, the first in the series are I Love Football and I Love Me. They're sort of geared towards 2 to 6-year-olds. Yeah. They teach self-worth, self-confidence, issues like that. He's going to be at LitFest this weekend, Saturday, right down here in Printer's Row. He's got. Are you gonna sign? You're gonna. What are you gonna do? Are you gonna talk to?
Yeah. Well. I mean, always will sign readings? Anyone. But we'll definitely. I'm gonna do just a reading of the books and what? Have the kids jump up and down.
I was
and
gonna say,
around.
What's it like to read books to 4-year-olds?
Well, it's funny. I actually worked all throughout university. I worked at an after school program in elementary school, so I've worked a lot with young kids. Now, recently, getting back into it, it's just like, oh my goodness. I did one reading. And they were all like really young, and the like first 30 minutes was like trying to break the ice with all these little kids who were like, who's this big scary guy? And there was a lot of crying. But by the end of it, you know, we were singing the rocket song and I was lifting them up like they were blasting off to the moon. It was a lot of fun.
I guess you think about like a 4-year-old, if he's going to have a typecast of what a children's author is going to look like, I guess he's not going to be 6'8 or whatever, however tall you are, like a former football player, right?
Right. It's like, you know, a little granny.
Right. You know, we were just talking about, I mean, this is almost turned into therapy, the idea of your cut stories. I mean, and that's kind of, I mean, that has been almost a primer for you in your career, because you played, you know, you made a transition to football. You were a guy who played in Canada, who came on to the Chicago Bears and before that, the Cleveland Browns. I mean, really every time sort of being close to being cut or making the team, it wasn't until midway into your career where you actually had a solid footing here in Chicago. And does the experiences of developing self-worth, self-confidence, and the things that you're talking about in these books, and the experience you had of getting cut from the basketball team, do they all help for a career in which every 6 months you have to think about what your next move's going to be? The idea that they may say, Israel's a great football player, but he costs too much money. We're going to cut him on June 1st. I mean, you know, all those things that we don't really think about when we think about,
you know,
the profession.
I always say, like, perseverance and faith in oneself and confidence, it's like a muscle, you know, and after you've been cut and have bounced back, or after you've failed at something and have stood back up and you look at yourself and you say, you know what, I'm okay, your confidence muscle, your perseverance muscle gets a little stronger. And I experienced that, you know, being cut, being told no, being told, oh, this guy will never make it. And, you know, getting there and being like, you know what, I'm surviving. I'm going to make it. I'll be okay. So with each experience, you get a little stronger and you get to a point where regardless, you know you're going to be okay. You know you'll be all right. And in sport, it really is one of those things that in life is for sure. In life, we all will face challenge. We all guaranteed will have ups and downs, different walks of life, different stories. But obstacle and challenge in life is guaranteed for all of us. And you know, sport has been great for me, and I'm sure a lot of other people, for helping you to understand that you can fight through that. There's another game tomorrow. You can make another play tomorrow.
And that's all on the field.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, that's one thing. And then you take that as well to off the field, the idea of just being in the business of the NFL.
And it's very similar. I remember even with the comic book, I met originally, I was just like, I've never done a comic book. Let me reach out to Marvel, reach out to DC. So I reached out to some people at Marvel Comics in DC. And they were just like, not so much. And you just keep going and you're like, okay. Then Ron Mars, who's a legend in the space, says, you know what? This is actually a new idea. And I can help you kind of craft it and shape it and turn it into something. I see what you're trying to do here. And he helps take it to the next level. And, you know, all these years later, we have this great property and we're having discussions about feature films and video games.
Well, it's great. I mean, you're talking about the Protectors.
Yes.
I mean, the idea that they're almost superheroes who are super athletes, the idea that they're football players that turn into superheroes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something real about that. Yeah. The idea that how we view you and how we view the people who are on the field, whether it be football or baseball, or that you are, you know, you're doing superhuman things. You're doing things that we can't do. And that's why we cheer for you. That's why we jeer, you know, we don't cheer for you.
Exactly.
But talk about that. Talk about how that experience and the experience of being sort of in the lens, how that helps you artistically and creatively when you're coming up with something like The Protector.
Well, I think, you know, for me, you know, I always felt like being in the lens and being on that stage was a part of the platform. You know, so, you know, and I know some athletes have said, you know, we're not role models, we're not heroes, but I've always felt that there is a calling, there is a choice, and that us as athletes that kids look up to, you know, the connection to the comic world is you have the ability to change people's lives and to touch people's lives and sometimes save people's lives.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, I early on, I realized and I felt that that was an opportunity. And although, like you said, for the most of my career, I was a special teams player. I was like the backup, you know, third string, the seventh guy in the game. But I always felt that even with that, you know, do what you can with your gift, with your ability, with what you have. And being under the lens has been incredible. And I think a part of the reason why I saw that, you know, and really why I wanted to tell that story of these athletes, that your ability in sport is actually a byproduct of this greater gift you have to change. The real gift is the ability to impact and influence lives.
Right. It's fascinating. And, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, the idea of being a special teams player or the seventh guy in, you know, as an athlete, as someone who has performed, and I always hear this too, you know, you think about all of the people who make the NFL were all of their stars in high school or college. At this, you get the NFL, you were the star on the team in college.
Yeah.
And then you have to go into a situation where you're the seventh guy in, or your special teams, or every time it gets to, you know, the end of training camp, there's a sweat because you're not sure you're going to make the team.
Yeah.
How do you mentally prepare for that? How do you prepare yourself with all the things we just talked about, self-worth, self-confidence, all this stuff, to go into a situation where you are the best here and now you're not necessarily the best at this level?
Yeah. Well, it comes to realization of there's only so much you can do. And actually, I had the pleasure today to spend part of the day with the Bears new rookie class. And we talked about some of those things. Like there's you need to focus on what you can control. So everyone's not going to get the same reps. Everyone's not going to get the same opportunity.
Interesting, yeah.
But the opportunity that you do get, you control. And if you only get one snap, make a play that snap, make that play count. And, you know, that was really kind of the focus of my preparation. You know, I knew I was an underdog. I knew that, you know, coming in free agent, every reason for them to take the first rounder or the seventh round pick over me was there. So I had to come in better shape than him. You know, so one of the best pieces of advice that I received was be the standard. Be the standard, because at the end of the day, if you're the standard, Izzy, they cannot cut you. And that's what I carried into camp. And in all the sprints, I always wanted to come in first. I always wanted to know what the end, the three technique, and the nose were doing. So at any time, they could say, hey, play any position.
That played a huge role for you.
Huge.
I mean, I think that you became sort of known for that. The idea you could go inside or outside. And Lovie Smith's defense, that was you were in a huge part of the flexibility of that.
Yeah, and I'm thankful for that advice, because literally it was other guys were saying, I'm this. I'm not doing anything else. And I'd be like, all right, I'll do. You want me to cover a punt? I'm 280, right? Okay. I'll cover a punt.
Right.
And you're able to go down there and make a play. And you know, the guy who was saying, I only do this one thing, you know, his locker's empty the next day. And it's just the harsh reality of versatility was really a key to keeping me in the game.
We're talking life. We're not even talking football anymore.
Yeah.
Israel Adonijay is in studio. He is the author of The Dream Kids Adventures, the series that's out. The first two books are out, I Love Football, I Love Me. Both of those for the 2 to 6-year-old range. He's going to be at Lit Fest at the Printer's Row Lit Fest, the old book fair down in Plymouth. This Saturday, he's going to be reading to the kids and signing. We'll continue our conversation here. He's my guest at the big table. We'll get tonight's news from Rob Martyr, and we'll continue here on the download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download from 720 WGN. You can hear the pep in my voice. Israel Adonijay is in studio, and we were talking about the Super Bowl years.
Yeah.
Just shooting the breeze in the break. So, Israel Adonijay has hung up the cleats and the helmet, of course. 11 years in the NFL, most of it with the Chicago Bears. He is now an author. He's authored the Dream Kids Adventure series, the first two books, I Love Football and I Love Me, both for 2 to 6-year-olds, children's literature, of course. And he does so much more. If charities as well. He's got some stuff coming up in July. We'll definitely promote that coming up here. But, you know, it's... as we continue our conversation, to think about, you know, the life side of this game, and to be a football player in Chicago who plays and has 11 years and to think most of them here in Chicago. And, you know, you say, oh, Israel Adonijay, what a career. They use the word career. He retired. He stepped away from the game. He retired. Yeah. You play as 11 years of your life. I mean, here you are talking about, I mean, you're a young guy. I mean, it's, you think about words like career and retire, and to our listeners or to me, I'm 82 years old, and I'm like, thank you for listening for all these years. I mean, you've played 11 years. I mean, talk about the idea of hanging it up, letting it go, and then starting a new chapter in your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting job because when you retire and when you start getting considered being old, you're still really so young and as far as life goes. And, you know, for me, I knew it was towards the end. You know, I ended up going to Detroit that 1 year. My entire career, I've been a runner, so I've been able to run. My hamstrings were giving me issues, my quads, you know, being able to run. And just the body was telling me it was time to hang it up. And you know, prior to that, I was willing to pay the price. I trained at this place called the House of Pain every summer, where you'd go and basically brutally just beat yourself up for, you know, a month. But after that month, the weapon would be ready to fight. You'd be in great shape. You could run for days. You were strong. And towards the end, I didn't want to spend a month at the House of Pain. You know, I didn't want to beat myself up. You know, that's how I knew it was time. Just I wasn't really necessarily ready to pay that price anymore. And had an opportunity at, you know, 2014. I was like, you know what? You know, my core business actually is manufacturing. I have a manufacturing business, and that was doing real well. And I was like, I'm ready. I've achieved all the things that I had. Well, I've achieved or had come close to achieving all the things that I'd set out to do. At 21, when I came to this great city of Chicago.
Wow.
And now, you know, at that time I was 34, and it was just like, you know what, it's time, and I'm thankful, and it's just the beginning. You know, it's just the beginning of the new chapter.
You know, you say that about the House of Pain, and it makes you recognize as a fan that, you know, we talk so much about the violent nature of the game.
Yeah.
The idea of your job as a defensive lineman is to crash into another offensive lineman on every single play when there's contact, and the grueling nature of competing in practices. But you never really hear about the off season, the idea that you're going to a place that they call the House of Pain to brutally beat yourself up to get ready to get beat up.
Right.
I mean, there is a significant physical toll beyond just what happens on Sundays in the NFL.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that are paying the price before the season, and you know, I hope the fans appreciate it, because it's to provide them this product that'll ultimately allow the city and for the fans to win, and you know, we don't know the after effects yet. We'll know, but there's a lot of guys. I mean, you're beat up, you know, to train that hard, to push that hard preseason, go into the season to beat yourself up, you know, for 19 weeks or whatever it might be. And then to take a short period of time and reset and start doing it all over again, you know, to do that, you know, 5 years takes a toll on the body. So, you know, guys pay the price, and they do it because they love to compete. They love the game. And, you know, for me, I mean, in this great city, it was so much fun, you know, represent, especially some of those years we had there defensively. It was incredible. I remember, you know, a handful of us, Wally Agunlie, you know, Tommy Harris, the D-line guys, we'd go out for dinner before every game, and we'd go to restaurants and you know, that year, 05 in particular, we'd get standing ovations. We'd have people cheering for just like, hey, guys, come on, like, get this, get it done. You know, good luck. And that passion, that love is really a driver and provides this, that fire for
you can
so
you could
players.
Notice when the team was doing well in the 05-06 years and all that time, you could nothing notice like the town.
Nothing like it. I mean, I'm telling you, and people have told me, listen, if we lose, my week is done. You know, so
that's gotta be weird. Is that weird? I mean, is that weird to like take all of that pressure and put it on your shoulders?
Yeah.
Like, the idea that some guy like myself is sitting out in LaGrange, like, my week is over if Adonijé doesn't get this sack.
Yeah. Why don't you didn't block that field goal kick, you know? But that's the beauty and like the ugliness of the game. It's like, the pressure's there and, you know, but you win, you know, you make it to the playoffs mm-hmm. and literally this entire city is just elevated. The energy everywhere, you just feel that vibration, because there's excitement in the air because, we're winning, you know, and that's, you know, that's what sport can do.
You know, sport as we know it and all the things that we've been talking about, when we talk about life. Whether it be confidence or whether decide the vibration, as you mentioned, winning, all that stuff is great. And then you get to the NFL and there's a business side to it. And we learn more and more about the things that have been covered up or things that may not be told to the fans.
Yeah.
We hear about the deteriorating health or the consequences of playing the game. When does it go from the life lessons, like you're teaching to 2 and 6 year olds, to something that's different?
I mean, unfortunately, it happens pretty quickly professionally. The harsh reality of the game is if you're not on the field, you can be replaced. And if you need to be on the field, you're a guy that they want, you know, more often than not, you get rushed back, especially in football. Most other sports that you look at, guys take all time. You know, guy gets a hangnail and he's like out for 2-3 weeks, and you're like, what? But in football, you know, you tear something or you have MCL surgery, and the guy's back, you know, in just record time, and it's just, unfortunately, it's the harsh reality of the game and just how the game is structured, where it's a culture of almost just toughness, and you know, you got to fight through that injury, fight mm-hmm. through the hurt. And that's just how the game is culturally, you know, and you know, old guys will tell you that we never drank water. You know, it's like, what? You know, like, whose idea was that? You know, but it's that culture has just carried on where, you know, I remember, you know, Kasim Mitchell, you know, fractured his leg and he played, you know, an entire quarter and a halftime with a fractured leg, you know, or guys have broken, you know, fingers and thumbs, and it's just, that's the game. It's built on toughness.
There's a weird kind of thing around it for the fans too, where we're going to give you more love if you played through injury and pain.
Yeah,
and things
yeah,
like that.
And you know, that's all great for the game, but you also got to remember that these are people, and that, you know, a fractured leg or a hand or a playing earlier on, I remember getting a brutal concussion. I was stuttering for almost a week. I had a stuttering issue just from a concussion I had. I could not form a full sentence without stuttering. But back then, I played the rest of the game. I concussed, I got up, and I played on, you know,
reasons you just mentioned.
Yeah, and thankfully, you know, their leadership and the leagues are, you know, they're looking at that today. You get a concussion, you're done.
Right.
You know, you're out. So you know that, you know, the league and the bodies that govern the game are working towards making the game safer for the players.
For playing in your generation, and it's a very specific, unique generation of football because it got fast real quick. It was probably the generation we think of, like, almost the 2000s, right? 2000,
right.
It got to the point where every quarterback was faster running. You saw a whole different level of not just speed, but intensity, violence.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, they've corrected the course a little bit in 2017. They've changed the rules in certain ways, and they didn't have to deal with it necessarily maybe in the 80s or 90s. When you think about the game and when you played and the idea that there were a lot of things that happened that the league just hadn't caught up on, concussions being one of them.
Yeah.
Are you worried about your future? I mean, you're a smart guy. You're doing a ton of stuff with business. You're writing, you're being creative, you're being artistic. But does that linger in your head about playing in that time?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, you're absolutely right. There's a window there when the game was ultra fast and, you know, you could hit a guy full steam coming across the middle and take his head off, and the game went on. You know, or the number one thing a coach would say was head on a swivel. You got blindsided. It was because you weren't checking side to side. Now you can't do that. You know, so it took some time for them to kind of protect the guys, and you know, it was entertainment wise, it had the game on another level. But for me,
And your defense, you took advantage of that. Yeah. The way that you were a fast defense, and you were the guys that were head on a swivel. You were the guys hitting across the middle. You were entertaining right. Chicago with this yeah. defensive mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, I think, you know, I think it'd be naive to say that playing 11 years, the hits that I've taken may not have some sort of effect on my body. And even, you know, I took 12 months off. I didn't do anything when I retired. I felt horrible, you know, so the importance of continuing to actively engage my body, you know, I've lost 20, 30 pounds, you know, continue to work out nowhere near at the same intensity, but to still keep the weapon sharp, you know, the mind is important, you know, so just to stay sharp, you know, you cannot relax, you know, to stay, you know, granted, I'm not preparing to face a 350-pound guy every week in our office, you know, but finding ways to keep your mind focused and keep your mind sharp and to keep engaged and to do things that allow you to not deteriorate, because, you know, if you're inactive and if you don't, you know, deterioration and breakdown,
that's a part of it.
It's a part of it.
Israel Adonijah is my guest. We're talking about his he's going to be at Litfest this weekend, the former Chicago Bear, 11 years in the NFL, played on some of the greatest defensive units Chicago has ever seen. I mean, we all hail the 85 Bears, but Lovey's defensive unit, which Israel Adonijah was a part of, holds high esteem to Bears fans everywhere. The books are Dream Kids Adventures. The books are called I Love Football and I Love Me. And they're part of a series about teaching self-worth and self-confidence to children, to 2 years to 6 years old. You also do a lot with your charities, and you always see the it was in Israel Adonijah Charities or Foundation. Now it's the IF Charities. Talk about the. I want to ask this question in a way that, I mean, it's a big question. It's a general question.
Yeah.
But the idea that you've spent time now in Chicago, like you said, since you're 21 years old, you went to Detroit for a little bit. We'll let you. We'll forgive you for that. But the idea that you've been doing charitable work during that time. You've gotten to know the city from being on a pedestal, meaning watching, you know, everyone enjoying you as entertainment. But at the same time, you've been able to become a civic leader, if you will, with what you do with your charitable foundation. What is Chicago to you? And also, what does it have to do to be a better city?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Chicago to me is really, you know, one of you know, North America's greatest cities. It's an incredible city, and especially for me because, you know, I got here at 21. I was a kid, you know, and I became a man in the city. I grew up here in the city, surrounded by, you know, great mentorship and support and great people. And really all of the things, many of the things that make Chicago so great, you know, I had the fortune to experience firsthand. And in some capacity, those things, those components touched my life, allowing me to develop to this person that I am today. I think as far as, you know, development to make the city better.
Yeah.
There's so many other things going on. There's a lot of challenges and there's, you know, some dust in the corners of our city. And, you know, when you look at those issues that need to be tackled, they're big things. So there's not necessarily one component that you can point to and say, right. You know what, you need to provide after school programs to solve this issue. You need to provide, you know, funding for this to solve issues. There's a lot of different components. And, you know, that's why I say ultimately it's really a, from top to bottom, it's, and I know everybody wants to talk violence first, even for myself, people always want to talk about the violence in Chicago, you know, solving violence or solving, well, that in particular, you know, it starts with providing opportunities. You know, I think most people in any area of life going through any struggle or any journey, if you ask them, do you want better for yourself? Do you want better for your children? 100% of them would say yes.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, so that really comes with providing opportunity. And the question, you know, and that I've been at some tables discussing is how do you do that?
Right.
You know, cause you can't just throw money at an issue, you know, it has to be a comprehensive plan that allows resource to be used in a way that's going to give people a direct path to earn the opportunities that can transform their lives and their lives beyond. So, you know, I think that when it comes to, you know, anything, homelessness, hunger, violence, education, you know, there are a lot of great groups in the city doing work. What I think would be key or a massive step in the right direction is all these silos of groups that are swinging the axe and doing the work. You know, if we can come together and you know, those people that are focused on doing things that are targeted at homelessness, let's get everybody together and say, hey, together, let's talk about this issue and can we solve this issue? There's a lot of groups, you know, activating around violence. Well, let's all get together at this table and say, let's not, we don't want to solve everything, but together, can we solve this one thing? And take that approach, because it's through unification, I think through brain share, mind share, that
team.
Well, exactly.
Right.
You know, teams win. And you're taking a team approach to the city. Not that it's going to be easy, but I've always found, you know, lifting something heavy is much easier when you have people helping you.
Israel Adonijay is going to be at the Lit Fest. He is will be have his own table. He'll be signing books. He's going to be reading to the kids. Dream Kids Adventure Series books. The first two, I Love Football and I Love Me. He also does the comic book The Protectors. And he's the man behind IF Charities, which will be having their 11th annual All-Star Football and Cheer Camp on June 17th, and also the annual fundraising event, Evening with IF Charities, on July 20th. You can get all the information at ifcharities.org. Israel Adonijay, it was my pleasure to have you here. I really appreciate you coming in and being my guest at the big table.
Justin, thank you. It was an honor and a privilege. Lots of fun.
All right. We're halfway through the show, Pete. That was great. Israel Adonijay in studio. Great to have him. I'm gonna try to check him out, you know, down at the Lit Fest this weekend.
My wife just sent me a text saying that she would like football more if everyone was like him.
Maybe they are, you know.
That's true.
It could be. I mean, maybe the trash talking and what you see in the post game is just all an act. It's all, you know, they're celebrities, right? Although I don't remember ever seeing Izzy go, yeah, like go crazy with the gold chains and you know, do a touchdown dance that was disrespectful to everybody. I don't remember that. Maybe I could have missed it.
It was a blanket statement. I shouldn't have said that, but I'm sure everybody is. I'm sure Ray Lewis is just as thoughtful.
Yeah, he's very thoughtful. So, yeah. All right, coming up, Deanna Griffin's Irons is here. We're going to talk about the Breakout Festival, Comedy Festival, which is coming up, as well as FemDot, the hip-hop artist from Chicago who is playing at Metro. Coming up on Thursday, part of the Red Bull Sound Select show, so we'll talk with him as well. And we'll play The Worst coming up at 10 o'clock. So we got a big, big second half of the show lined up. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, Kristen Toomey and Rena Kalm will be here. Two great stand-ups in Chicago. They'll be playing The Worst, 312-981-7200. There's one of my favorite segments of the week where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes, which is always great. I mean, it's one thing to complain, but it's another when there's a pizza on the line, right? I mean, that's really when you really have to sharpen up your complaints. That's where you have to really say, is this worth it? And that's where you text in or you call in. And, you know, if you win, and it's great. We get more and more people are playing every week. And if you win, there's a chance you could get a pizza. There's also other stuff this week, too. Wow. Oh, there we go. Ooh, the Sycamore Speedway. Wow. All right. There you go. All right. I expect some A-grade complaints coming up. That's good. We'll play The Worst coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, this week, Second City is hosting a third annual Breakout Comedy Festival. Starting Thursday night, the Comedy Club will partner with NBC to celebrate diversity in comedy. This is an opportunity for comics of color to get on stage and get noticed. Why is that significant? Well, because part of the problem that Hollywood has had over the years is a lack of relationships with diverse voices, meaning you can't really be diverse if you don't know where to find diversity. Not only will young comedians get a chance to perform in front of industry people and audience, but the festival will also highlight talent like Danny Pudi from Community, Parvesh China from Outsource, and Second City alum Chris Redd, who had a nice star turn in the Lonely Island film Popstar, loved it last year. They'll be hosting. In studio with me tonight, Deanna Griffin Irons, the Director of Diversity and Inclusion for Second City. Deanna, good to see you. It's been a while since I've seen you. Thanks for coming in.
It's been a while. Thanks for having me, Justin.
All right, so let's talk about this. This is a festival. It's in its third year.
Yes.
And talk about why it's important to continue this festival in Chicago.
Well, it's important because we're providing a new platform for new voices to be heard. There's a lot of different things that are being that's happening on the national level in Chicago. And stand-up and improv and satire is kind of where you can hear all these different perspectives. So comedy is that bitter peel, that bitter pill, if you will, that you want to swallow mm-hmm. while you're getting the truth.
That's good. That's delightful. Wow, I'll take two. That's good. All right, so let's talk about diversity in comedy because it's kind of the industry's, and I wouldn't even say dirty little secret. I wouldn't say dirty. I wouldn't say secret. There's a lot of white dudes who perform improv, sketch, stand-up, who get hired in Hollywood. You see it turn out where they're able to be creative, take risks. It turns into Emmy Award-winning stuff, Oscar Award-winning stuff. But it always, and at the end of the year, you go, huh, it's just been a lot of white dudes.
Yes.
I mean, let's talk about that pipeline, the idea of what's stopping Hollywood from being diverse. One of the issues we talked about was relationship, the sort of network.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of silos, you know, on a national level, you know, on a city community level, we have a lot of silos where we have a lack of relationships. We have a lack of building new risk. Taking those new risks where we can kind of venture out and to discover new talent. So I think if people are operating in their own box, mm-hmm. they're going with what they're used to and comfortable with. I mean, but we also know historically we have a patriarchal society and country that we're operating
right.
from. So we have to kind of break those walls on so many levels.
And you have to do it in a way that it's not, and whenever you hear a backlash towards an Oscars or Hollywood or movies that come out in the summertime or what have you, you're way past the point at that point. We talk about diverse. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to give this diverse voice this $400 million project. It really starts when you think about where the talent's being developed, where talent scouts are going to find comedians and things like that.
Yes, and you, not only where you're finding them, but providing access. You know, I think sometimes we have to create programs, which is what we do at Second City. We're creating new initiatives. The Bob Curry Fellowship is one of those initiatives that we've had in its fourth year. Breakout Comedy Festival, obviously, is its third year. It's a platform where we're creating a new initiative to make access and provide talent that stage and that space for their voice to be heard. And a lot of times, it's sometimes that old adage of build it and they will come. Sometimes you have to go to talent, to where the talent is, where the community
right,
is,
right.
to bring them to you, you know, and that's what theaters all around are doing. You know, they're making the work accessible. So it's the same thing in comedy, is that we can't just rely on people are going to just naturally come to us. We have to create the programming and then find where is the talent and go to them.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you, as an outreach coordinator, as someone who's done this for 15 years at Second City, how do you find the talent and make sure that other people, especially the industry that's coming to Chicago, find them?
You know, it's really grassroots, Justin. You know, I remember when I first came to Second City, because I'm from Second City, Detroit, but not coming from Chicago, I didn't know about these invisible lines that sometimes we have in neighborhoods. But, you know, I really was on foot, going to neighborhoods, going to different poetry houses, comedy shows, and different places and venues that I had never been before. One, because I was curious. I think you have to have a yearning. You have to be inclusive within your own self and being. You have to be curious
yeah.
about hearing something that's different. So that kind of grassroots approach is like, let me go outside of my neighborhood. Let me see who's performing this and what they're doing over here. Kind of makes you stay current and topical. So that's a kind of approach with relationship building and the kind of risks that you have to take to bring new voices, to bring and cultivate those audiences that will help nurture this symbiotic relationship between talent, audience, people that are taking
has
the
it,
art.
Has it gotten easier for you in 15 years? You don't have to go door to door anymore to find, excuse me, is there a comic that lives
yeah.
here? I mean, has it gotten easier in the way that there's more... because Second City's exploded, more students are coming in, that ultimately there'll be more diversity?
Yeah, it has gotten easier where when I remember when I first was out on the South Side, people would say, Second who? and the brand was just not known as well. And I think it, a lot has to happen. What's happening in comedy on TV? What's happening in prime time? So when you think of SNL, when you think of the type of comedy shows that are happening on TV, then people kind of, oh, it's sketch comedy, it's improv. So when it saturates the TV and other forms of media,
yeah,
then it trickles over into the institutions and sketch comedy world. So then people are like, oh, it's Second City. They do that improv thing, you know. So,
well, it makes sense to me. I mean, when you think about the idea that, and I'll think about Saturday Night Live is a great example, where a couple years ago there was this pushback where there just wasn't enough diversity on the show. And you think about, well, where does Lorne Michaels go? Where does his writers go? Well, they go to Second City, or they go to I.O., or they go to Groundlings, or they go to other places. And most of the body of work there is white guys. Maybe. And you started to see that's where they're going. They say, this guy's really funny. I'm going to grab him. This woman's great. And specifically, they'd be all white. And the idea that Second City, is it on Saturday Night Live to go find people of color in different places, or is it on the feeder systems that have been set up, either formally or informally, to be more diverse when the scouts come?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's on the institution, it's on the talent, it's on the network, you know, to, one, know that the talent is there. So there's no shortage of talent in the world at all. We know that, you know, we've been doing performing entertainment for many, many, many years. So it's just a matter of, you know, how do we want to be more representative of all the voices that live and exist in this world? And how do we want to tell that story? And we have to remember that there isn't a single story. There isn't a single narrative. So it's not just the white, you know, fella's voice,
right,
you know,
right.
There's more narratives out there. And so we have to break those molds of there's only one story to be told. There's only one way to kind of venture and have comedy.
It's interesting because I think that the world of comedy and others, and I mean, obviously it's insular and you don't know essentially how people think at the top and things of that nature, but it seems like there is more interest in having diverse voices on television, in movies. We saw with this year's Oscars, with Moonlight, we see with the performances that come on TV and some of the great shows that are coming out right now. So the question is, do the tastemakers have to be diverse? Does the talent have to be diverse? Does the institution that presents the comedy has to be diverse? Like, it's really fun to think about if you're really holistically going to take on the idea that Hollywood needs to be diverse, how do you do it? How do you change it?
Yeah, it comes with, we do have to invite more people to the party, more people to the table. You know, we cannot look in one way of seeing a type of voice or story being told. You know, I think in theater and in art, you know, our sensibilities always have to be open. We know that art, you know, I've always known that, you know, art doesn't have a color. There are different people who tell this story of various different races and various different backgrounds, but that's what makes the art unique. That's what makes
the background, the perspective, right?
Yeah, that's what makes, you know, comedy unique. I mean, no one wants to hear the same story, a monolithic view of anything, right? Or do we?
No,
we
you're right.
Don't.
Yeah, right.
We do. We don't. You know. So you know, I think when we kind of break out of our molds and our own silos that we have built in this country, you know, it is reflective in the work not only for women, for different races, but sexual orientation, gender, socioeconomic status, but all these various different, you know, fields that fall under diversity, because that's what America is. You know, that's what the art is. That's what comedy is.
Right. Deanna Griffin Irons is the director of diversity and inclusion for the Second City. They've got the third annual Breakout Comedy Festival coming up here starting Thursday night, Second City. And this is a collaboration between Second City and NBC. There's a lot going on there, a lot of great people from Chicago, but also from around the country. You know, I want to ask you, because there was a little bit of controversy at the Second City in the last year just about cast members running into or doing sort of like a political show to an audience that didn't necessarily want that political show. Or, you know, I'll just generically say that.
Yeah, yeah.
And as I think as Second City becomes more and more diverse, and it's a good thing, and more actors of color get on stage at Second City, and you lose that weird formula they had for years where it's five guys and two women, and you know, we had to have one person of color, and it's changing.
Mm-hmm.
When you have more and more people of color getting to stage to be able to express themselves and tell jokes and whatever, and they look out at a place like Second City, and it
it caters to a tourist audience. It caters to an audience that is predominantly white. Mm-hmm. What's the reaction? What is the relationship like, and how does the actor feel when they get to the stage and they're performing to people that don't look like them?
It's liberating and it's challenging at the same time. You know, to share the perspective of perhaps, for instance, take a topic such as Chicago violence that's happening, and, you know, to satirize something that is huge about what's happening, you know, with males, black men, and or anything that's kind of regarding, you know, race, and you may not have people relate to it, and it's like it's frustrating at times, but you know that you are the voice and the purview for the audience to get this different perspective and take, because some people are coming from their suburbs or they're tourists, and this is their only view
sure.
of social political satire. And that is the culture. You know, satire
sure.
is the culture. It's the world. And we take everything that's happening in it, regardless of race, ethnicity, gender, age, all of that. We take all of that and have all these different perspectives on stage who attack it and put that truth in front of you. And it's important. So, it's frustrating. You know, you want to have more people that can relate and that look like you, but you want people to hear your story. And sometimes you think that we can go beyond this race thing and that you're going to understand and connect with me just by the human condition that we all exist. And here is the struggle, the adversity, or here is the joy that
right.
I'm going through.
Well, I think of African-American groups that I've worked with, and they will say that, you know, performing a show in front of a black audience as opposed to a white audience is completely different. Different jokes work and different jokes don't, and it goes vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting dichotomy to me because, you know, a lot of times we talk about diversity and it's always on the talent side about getting on the stage, but the audiences, and Second City is a great example, there has to be a push for diversity. So how do you do outreach to get different voices in the seats? Not just on the stage, but people who are like, hey, I want to go see comedy, and I might not be the sort of the go-to person that usually comes to this place.
You know, a part of it is creating different creative ways to make this work accessible. How do you get the underrepresented, you know, communities, students, audience that may not even be able to afford the regular ticket prices to come and see it? So, you know, you might have to rent a bus and have a partnership with a school, a community organization. Mm-hmm. You know, you might want to partner with HBCUs. You know, there's a lot of different great organizations that you can partner with that would love to come to a theater and to see a show. So that kind of reaching out and that grassroots approach where it's like, you know what, I'm going to do something different and I'm going to contact someone different that's out of my Rolodex, and I'm going to invite them to see this show. And that's all that it is. I mean, part of my work is all about having this inclusive nature where I'm going to invite as many people to the table as I can. One, it has nothing to do, because it's more interesting. It's just more interesting to have.
Yeah, as an artist, it is. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
To have all those different perspectives. I'm going to learn something and grow just by having a conversation with someone who is different from me and who has a different experience.
Deanna, for you, and you've been around for Second City trying to make inroads in Bronzeville. I remember Second City was going to do a South Side theater, and, mm-hmm. and there was this thought about outreach being brick and mortar, this idea of bringing a theater to a community. That didn't necessarily work. I mean, when you're trying to develop not just diverse talent, but diverse audiences, I mean, do you have to think outside the box in 2017, even though, race relations are better than they have been, or maybe not, but better in terms of theater than they have been before?
Absolutely. I'm always thinking of ways to kind of get people into the space or create programming that might be of interest to someone that's different than me, or how to represent, you know, more Asian Americans or the different groups of people in that space. And there's social media. There's just you have to get people to blog
right.
about it. You've got to have a different take on how you're going to tell your story, on what's going to make people come to them. What is it going to connect for them? And hopefully there is a story there that people would connect with.
Deanna Griffin Irons is Director of Diversity and Inclusion for the Second City. The third annual Breakout Comedy Festival is coming up on Thursday, and it's going to be funny. I mean, we're talking serious stuff.
And I love the combo. It's great. I mean, this is good stuff. I want to know more about how you do these kind of things, but there will be jokes and it'll be good stuff. The Breakout Comedy Festival starts on Thursday, runs through Saturday. Deanna, great to see you, and I can't wait to have you back on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Justin.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, coming up on the 8th, the Red Bull Sound Select Series takes over Metro. Berkeley-based rapper Lil B is headlining, but for Chicagoans, it's all about the opener, hometown hero PhemDot. I want that old thing back, oh baby. I want that old thing back with me. I want that old thing back, oh baby. I want that old thing back with me. I want that old thing back, oh baby. I want that old thing back with me. I want that old thing back, oh baby. I want that old thing back with me.
I said I need that old thing. I need that hair. I need that road game, bring it back from the soul. Said I need that fist fight, get in before street light. Come on or damn near just don't come home. Said I need that grass thing, I need that rough and tumble. Kill a man at my man's house before we knew the struggle. Back when $5 was 2 weeks pay, and we'll go to the store and blow it all in the day. This before the taxes just take too much when you move to the birds. But you know that the hood got love for you. Back when big homies throw fish, not slug for you. Had to convince your friends to come to the bar, but you need that blue mystic, please. Flame of hot some cheese, fruity for 40 cents a piece. Bumping 50 cent while I'm in the Honda with B. Riding down the street, head out the window and scream. It's
PhemDot is a 21-year-old hip-hop artist from Chicago. He's got a new mixtape, 2020 Hour, and he's coming off the last Sound Select show where he turned heads opening for the Cool Kids. It's our pleasure to welcome PhemDot to The Download tonight. PhemDot, thanks for being here.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. This is great. You have a phenomenal radio voice. This is wonderful.
I do.
That's wonderful.
I wish more people said that.
Right?
Rob Martier does. He's upstairs. All right. So
that's all that matters.
All right. So I made reference right there. I mean, you already done Red Bull Sound Select before. You opened for the Cool Kids. What's it mean to be back on the lineup and playing Metro on the 8th?
It's going to be fun, man. Like, Metro will probably be the biggest place I've played so far. Red Bull, they're really nice people. So, like, they really are there for the artists, and that's really cool. And to be with Lil B, too, that's going to be fun. It's going to be really interesting. So it means a lot that they, like, reached out to me to do it. Red Bull, all the shows are very, like, hand-selected and they're curated. They literally think, okay, I have to pick out who we want, who we think will fit. So the fact that, like, this is not the first time, you know, and they continually see that I see fit in these spaces is really dope.
That works out.
Yeah.
When you say it's the biggest place you've played, talk about where do you play? Where would be your home base to perform live in Chicago?
Typically around, like, a Shuba's, Lincoln Hall. I've done Lincoln Hall a lot. I've done Reggie's a lot, those type of space. I have done, obviously, Thalia Hall with the Cool Kids, which was cool. But more or less, I'm doing, like, Lincoln Hall, Shuba's, Reggie's.
When you think of indie hip-hop in Chicago, is there a club that comes to mind that all of the people who are not only the artists that want to get on stage, but the audience, that they know that's where they're going to go to see Chicago kids doing work?
Right now, you'll get it's pretty much like a Reggie's in a South Loop or anywhere in Wicker. Like, Double Door obviously just closed down, but that was also a pretty nice space. But it's a lot of actually places that are popping up, like Chop Shop and a lot of places in Wicker that are kind of just popping up. But I would definitely say, like, Lincoln Hall, Shuba's, Reggie's are kind of the top three where it's like, okay, I know I'm definitely about to go see an up-and-coming artist type thing.
When I listen to your music, what pops out to me are the lyrics. It's a range of things of talking about your life, but also about social issues, but also the things that affect a 21-year-old, which is money, parties, and things like
Right.
Talk about writing. I mean, when did you start writing, and do you consider yourself a writer first or a musician?
Definitely a writer first. I consider myself a writer first because that's what I put the most time into. I mean, like, obviously delivery is extremely important as well, but if you deliver something and it's not written well, it's still kind of shaky. I started writing when I was, like, 6 years old when I wrote my first song. It's like, what you want to be when you grow up? It was for, like, a community center. It's super interesting. I made a Seinfeld reference. So that's, like, I said I might be like George Costanza. That was a thing, and that was huge because, you know, why am I watching Seinfeld at 6 years old?
And, yeah, you're 6 years old.
But, yeah, so ever since then, I really just been writing a lot. I write, like, 4 song ideas a day, and I always pretty much have ideas and concepts just, like, to tell my story and stories of people around me and then what affects me. So But I definitely consider myself a writer first. I mean, I love music. I'm a musician, and, you know, by craft, but I'm a writer by nature.
Did it start for you at a young age where you said, okay, I'm a writer and I'm gonna write raps? Or was it poetry? What introduced you to the rhyme?
My brother was a rapper. My oldest brother, like, locally was trying to rap. And that's when, that was the walking introduction. We were 12 years apart. So literally our connection was music. But I was a rapper first. I was a rapper and then, you know, doing like, you know, 5-paragraph essays in class. You know, so like, but when it comes to rapping, I actually did poetry by accident. I didn't start getting into poetry until I was about 16, 17. I played around with it when I was younger, but it was raps off the back, straight out the gate. It was raps being written.
Well, I mean, you hear, and especially with the Chicago scene right now, you'll hear a lot of artists that came up out of poetry first, whether it be at the Young Authors or 826 Shy or downtown at the Harold Washington Library. But there's just this like movement of poetry that then they've discovered the music.
Yeah.
They kind of put it together. So it's interesting to say that it's almost the exact opposite.
Yeah, literally. I actually, you know, I grew up through Young Chicago Authors. I did Louder Than a Bomb. Mm-hmm. But I did that because like I knew rappers went there. So that, U Media, things of that sort, like, I would go around. Like, I'm a product of that. And writing in these workshops, in these spaces, has enhanced my writing ability dramatically, as much as my performance ability. Like, I owe Young Chicago Authors a lot.
But you were doing it knowing that you wanted to pursue a career as a rapper.
I was doing it knowing, like, okay, if I write this poetry, I'll probably become a better rapper.
Interesting.
You know?
Well, what did you learn there? What was it about poetry that made your lyrics better?
One, like, content-wise, just how to... Storytelling, really. Because poetry has a really interesting way of telling stories without giving it all away right away. And just, like, I've always really liked literary devices because I read a lot. So, like, you know, alliteration and, like, all these other things is something that always kind of caught my attention. And just being there just forced me to look at rap from a different perspective. Like, take a step back and look at rap as writing and look at poetry. Look at rap as poetry. And that's something that I was doing before, but not on a level nearly that I was doing once I started attending there. And even especially performance as well. Like,
yeah.
You have to, spoken word is completely different. You have to make sure every word hits and you have to catch their attention and grab them. And doing that.
And music's more, rap's more like a flow where you might miss a word or miss that hit on the word, but we know what you're trying to get at.
Right. Yeah. And then, but with me being able to do spoken word and poetry, I was able to push that to my rap so it feels like every word, I want at least people to think that like every word is carefully picked out and like every word's meant to hit. And that's something that I took from doing spoken word. So
FemDot's my guest in studio, hip-hop artist who is opening at the Red Bull Sound Select Series at Metro on June 8th, opening for Lil B. We're talking to the 21-year-old about his burgeoning career. It is true. I mean, to be on your second Sound Select show, I mean, in a way that, like you said, is a curated experience. They're coming after you.
It's not,
and all of the hype around, you know, hype in a good way, not in a bad way, but and your career. Where do you see yourself going? I mean, as a rapper from Chicago, this is the right time to be a rapper from Chicago. There's
a lot of
eyeballs on this city.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself going, and what's the future for you?
So the future for me, I'm finishing school. I'm still in school. I'm at DePaul. I'm finishing my last year, so I'll be done next March. It's like, you know, trimesters, so it's kind of strange. But really just doing music all out. Hopefully by this time I can be touring. That's the goal. I just keep doing shows. I do shows a lot in and out of Chicago as well, from like Denver to New York to Philadelphia to Texas and things of that sort. So just continuing to just build these relationships and, you know, work on new music, obviously, and really just grow from here. But next year, ideally, tours, festivals would be where I would want to be at.
Do you find pressure, and pressure, lowercase pressure, in the way that there has been success out of Chicago? And it's a certain kind of music. It's a lyrical, think of Chance, and you think of the style that's kind of coming out, and they automatically want to dub it that kind of style, where Chicago has always been a conscious rap place with Common and Kanye and other places. Do you find pressure when you don't necessarily sound like the things that are blowing up at the Grammy level from this city?
No, not really. More or less like just being young and wanting stuff now and getting over that. That was more of the pressure. Like, man, like I could make this happen now. But seeing Chance do well and Vic do well and No Name and Saba and other people, it's more or less just like, I know these people. I've watched them grow up. It's relieves pressure because it's like, it's possible. You can actually do this with whatever style you want it to. So I feel like it more or less relieves pressure watching everyone else do well. Kind of just, you know, keeps a competitive edge. It's like, all right, now I know I got to, you know, I got to get back in the, you know, if it's basketball, so I got to get back in the gym. Like, you know, it's all right. So I definitely feel like it's
where's
more.
Where's your gym?
Where's my gym?
Is it your house? Is it your where's your gym?
My gym is mostly the house, mostly my little apartment. I'm probably in there typing or writing raps all day or all night, and then I record a lot out of Soundscape Studios in Humble Park. They're really nice people there, but the gym is really home. I go back home and I'm like locked in, like all right. Let's get to writing. Or anywhere else. Like, I type on my phone now, too. So, literally, like, anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. As you told us, you know, you're writing 2, 3, 4 raps a day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself being the kind of artist that is going to represent what's happening around in the city, the current events, other things in your music?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, you talk about things that are in your life.
Mm-hmm.
They're autobiographical. But there's also the other things that are happening, whether it be inequities, whether it be politics, whether it be violence, whatever it is. Do you find yourself as a Chicagoan gravitating to writing about the things that are happening in the city?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like as an artist, it's an obligation, at least as a writer, it's an obligation to tell not only your story, but the stories of people around you. And that's why I feel like I consider myself a writer, because I would like to convey, you know, what's going on with me and also what's going on with people who probably can't express it themselves. It's just something that I kind of fell into. It wasn't like I was purposely trying to, like, you know, I see somebody on the train or, you know, I see somebody walking, like, oh, yeah, I definitely got to write about them. It's just like, because, you know, and sometimes you catch yourself as an artist seeing something bad happen and knowing, like, man, I'm about to write about this. So, like, like, it's like, oh, man, like, this happened, but, like, I just thought of a whole thing. So I try to get out of that and try to just write, because generally stories need to be told. So I feel like as time goes along, I drift more and more into my music being reflective of the times, whether that's in the U.S. or in Chicago, mostly in Chicago because obviously it's my home, but
yeah.
Just in the country as a whole, I feel like I kind of have a duty to tell my story to connect with people, but also show what's going on.
My last question for you is, how do you stay patient? You're 21 years old. You're seeing young people around you that are blowing up in different places. You just said it's like tough to watch people in a good way, but
yeah.
I mean, not in any sort of jealous way, but I mean, to keep the patience. How do you do that? How do you recognize and mentally prepare for a career in this work?
It gets hard. It's hard at times. You know, I'll sit up on a bed in the morning. Like, I could drop out right now and just rap. Like, I could just drop out and just rap. But what it comes down to is that things work itself out. It always does. I know that I don't want things now. I mean, like, I want things now in terms of, like, you know, to continue to build. But delayed gratification is the best gratification you can get, because it's, you get more that way and you appreciate it more. So I think it's just I was lucky enough to be instilled with the idea of delayed gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just, you know, people around me and things. And also people around me keep me grounded. It's like, okay, we believe in what you're doing no matter how long it takes. So that helps a lot. Delayed gratification, just knowing that when I do get it, it'll be way better than getting it now.
21-year-old writer, hip-hop artist FemDot is going to be at Metro on June 8th, opening up for Lil B as part of the Red Bull Sound Select series. He's got a new mixtape out, 2020 Hour. And like you said, going to be at Metro on the 8th. FemDot, yeah. A pleasure to have you in studio. Good
Thank
luck
you.
With your career.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
14, May honor roll. 16, I skipped school. 17, got my diploma. 18, I had fees. 7, I had bars. At 8, I had 16. 6 was in the booth because Big Bank had believed. Hitting shorties at 14. Fell in love at 16. Broke hearts. The next year, I was broke at 18. I was broke at 18. Could have sold dope at 18. Got the college. Let me work while my roommate was dead asleep. Look like my father's crazy, how we barely speak. Met BK, now his brother is mine. Here in LA, I'm a slide, right up D405. I've been depressed, I'll be happy, I'll be stressed all the time. They made your real friends, cause they say yes all the time. Getting this college diploma last night, I wasn't sober, so now I'm up in the morning, just praying with a hangover.
All right, the worst coming up, Rena Kalm and Kristen Toomey in studio. Great stand-up comedians here in Chicago. They're coming from an open mic. They're coming in hot. Yeah. I saw Kristen put something up on social media that was like, had to leave open mic before I mauled this audience member. It, you know, I definitely going to bring it up. So worse could be open mic audience member. 312-981-7200. We're going to play The Worst tonight, coming up 10 o'clock, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. We got pizza. We've also got a, looks like a pack of admissions to Sycamore Speedway for the 2017 race season. That's cool. 312-981-7200. We'll start taking your submissions. We're going to have some good stuff tonight. I'm looking forward to it. It's always great to have Kristen and Rena. They're great. Great comedians. Hardworking. Every time I follow them both on Instagram, and it's amazing. They gig all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'd be like a picture of them in the car, you know, as they're going to Indianapolis or to wherever they're, you know, whatever a day trip can take you. But they're headlining at festivals and doing clubs all over the place. They're hard working, man. Mm-hmm. I love it. That's a Chicago hustle. That's good.
They come here and take it easy.
This is a lazy Tuesday, as they say in the business, lazy Tuesdays. Oh, what are you doing? Just a lazy Tuesday. I'm gonna do some AM radio. I appreciate it. They're busy, so I appreciate that they come down into studio to entertain us, and they're going to do that. Coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour, stay with us.
It's going down,
all right, it's a download. It's the worst. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Playing the worst tonight, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes for pizza. That's always good. In studio tonight, I'm very excited to have back Rena Kalm and Kristen Toomey.
Hey.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. All right, so let's get to some of this. Kristen, you got some shows coming up.
I know.
Dan Savage's Savage Love.
Plug a lot tonight.
Look at this. Savage Love, which is live, is going to be live at, where's that?
Music Box
next Thursday.
Cool.
You got the Chicago Women's Funny Festival, which is coming up as well that weekend.
Yes.
And also.
At Stage 773.
Right.
You can get tickets
Belmont.
There.
Rena, you're going to be at Top 10 Tuesdays, as you are all the time.
Yep,
right?
Except for right now, it's an anomaly of a week.
I remember last time it was the same thing. Like, you did a Top 10 Tuesdays plug, and you're like, but not tonight.
Yeah, well, every other one.
Every other one.
Yeah.
Every
you know,
other
they cancel.
Hey,
they shut the building down.
That's the worst.
They shut the whole building down when they know I'm coming here is the thing. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, this takes
do.
Precedent,
right.
And,
right.
Yeah.
As we said, this is really a place you go, you know, this is Lazy Tuesdays.
Yeah.
When you guys aren't working, this is where I get you guys. Right?
Well, last week they did cancel the show, too, but it was because Dion Cole came in last minute and did a special
yeah.
there. So that, like,
does
yeah,
that happen
awesome.
A lot when
they added another
do?
Show.
Yeah.
So he sold out two shows on a Tuesday.
It's so
just
cool.
Like last minute.
Does that happen a lot
so
at a place like Laugh Factory, where a comedian will come in and then the regular programming's out for someone who's
not
doing it?
Super often, but I know
no.
that they're about to film a bunch of those Netflix specials or Comedy Central specials, so I know that they're all scrambling to find places to run their hours and stuff like that.
Right.
So you
right.
never know. Showbiz, huh?
Showbiz.
Well, we'll be looking for both of your Comedy Central specials here, right?
Sure, yep. It's coming out next decade. A month
right.
from yester tomorrow.
Let's get depressed about our careers at the
our
start
careers
of the
worst.
Show.
I'm happy where I'm at.
All right,
yeah, we're all good.
All right, we're good. 312-981-7200. Let's start, like we start every week, with Pete Zimmerman. Pete, what do you got for the worst, buddy?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
Grainy Facebook video of the Jumbotron at a U2 concert.
Totally.
Perhaps you've seen some over the weekend.
Perhaps I have.
God.
There's a lot of people at the U2. For a guy who didn't know U2 was coming to Chicago. Like, I just missed it. It was a Saturday night, and I'm like, oh, U2's at Soldier Field. Oh, it's nice enough to have a concert outside?
I just figured if U2 was coming to town, they would put something in my phone to remind me against my will, and it would just pop up.
I'm not over that.
You're not over that?
I almost picketed
yeah.
Soldier's Field, but I was, you know, busy.
I've gone to see them live, but yeah, I can't forgive them for that, you know?
I will never. They pushed me to the edge. But I'm...
Oh.
All right. 312-981-7200. All right, Kristen, what do you got for the worst?
That joke was the worst.
That was good. No, I liked it. That's good.
That joke right off the bat.
They pushed me to my Larry Mullen. Oh, it's not the same, you know? It's not.
Is that someone else in the band? Yeah. I only know... Bono yeah. and
he's the best the looking one.
Who is
Larry Mullen?
Is he the
so.
Buzz cut guy?
I don't
like
see a looker
guy?
In the bunch. Frankly, yeah. I don't see a looker in the bunch.
Well, I don't know, you know.
But remember that video? Here's what's the worst: a YouTube video where they, what song was it? They had a got. They all put their heads there and like feet were on their face. Do you remember this? It
yeah,
was
I
just
I don't
their face,
the song, yeah.
And like people put. Fruit on it.
I didn't.
And then it was like
that.
Little feet. And I was like, oh, I was like 12 and I was like disgusted.
Pretentious YouTube videos, the worst.
Yes.
Right. Rena, what do you got for the worst?
And don't put stuff in my phone.
I just, you know,
don't molest me when I'm 12 with your foot fetish and then put stuff in my phone.
Oh, the worst is people needing attention is the worst. That is, there's so much of it flying around all the time, you know, like just do something and people will look at you. But, you know, people just want attention for needing attention. I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Sounds
like I hope this person is listening.
Yeah.
This is like
you're already
book.
You too. You don't have to put fruit and feet on your face. You know what I mean? No, that's not the same thing.
630 says the song is Numb.
Numb. Yeah. And that was a good album.
Yeah. Maybe it's good song. Numb to the little feet that are on my face.
No, but it's lately with like Kathy Griffin and Bill Maher, it's like, oh my gosh, you're so desperate. It's so sad. It's not even relevant. It's so like, what are you doing? Leave us alone. Nobody needs to see or hear
this. It's a weird cycle, like an attention factory.
Yeah.
They know how to do it. So they just keep doing it and it just gets worse and worse and worse.
You're yeah. Right.
So thirsty.
But I do like that it's not getting the same results that it was, say, like 8 or 9 years ago. Like, you know, maybe like 2008, we really peaked with like that pop culture obsession. Mm-hmm. Like TMZ was the biggest thing.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And it was like shocking. And that type of stuff, those stunts really worked. And now we're just like, we're not buying
it. They got to read
it. They still are. We're just over it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like to some demographics, they still are working. Like, not as large of a scale, but
well, I mean, some people are still wearing, you know, Crocs. Like, yeah.
I wear Crocs.
Okay. Well, you're the worst.
All right. 312-981-7200. We got some good stuff. Rena Kalm, Kristen Toomey in studio. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll start getting to these texts and calls. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. What's going It's the worst here to download 312-981-7200 in studio with me tonight. Rena Kalm.
Hi.
Good to see you. Kristen Toomey. Good
Hello.
To see you, Kristen. All right. So let's get to some of the calls. Let's get to the worst tonight. We are complaining about the worst things in society. For prizes, so far has been mostly you two. So let's break it up with Teresa. Teresa, what do you want? What's the worst, Teresa?
The worst is I just broke my foot a couple of days before my birthday. Today is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Aww.
What do you have crutches?
Right now I'm using a walker.
Oh, is it one of those where you kneel and it's got the wheels on it?
No. They put a boot on me for now just to try and see if the boot will help it.
Well, breaking your foot at any time is the worst.
It is the worst.
Right before your birthday, double worst.
Did you have big plans or anything that you had to change?
Well, there was two parties I missed, and I was supposed to go away for a couple of days.
No.
Where
were you supposed to go?
We were supposed to just take a little trip to Ohio.
Oh, well, Ohio's the worst.
Unless you're from there. And then,
no, I'm just kidding.
Kidding.
All right,
well,
Teresa.
We hope you feel better, really heal quickly. How did you break it?
I just got up off of a chair, and I guess my foot fell asleep.
Oh, no.
And that was it.
That's the worst right there, because that could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say playing polo with the horses.
Birthdays are enough stress.
But when your foot falls asleep, that's the worst. When both do at the same time, that's the worst.
And then breaking
it. And then breaking it is worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, Teresa. You've already got Kristen's heart, or at least the pizza. So,
okay.
All right, hold on. All right, Teresa, the front runner, just with her broken foot. Rena, you're nonplussed. You're like, you know what?
I feel bad. It's
you feel
terrible.
Bad, but you don't think it's pizza bad.
Oh no! We should deliver
She's
it to her as well. You know, I feel like she can't pick it up.
Rena's like, well, let's see what everybody else has to say.
Yeah. No, I'm just I'm scared of a birthday curse. As my birthday's coming up, and I'm focused on my own problems.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
It's the 11th. She's a Gemini.
Yeah.
I am a Leo. August.
Okay.
So what do you got going on? What's birthday plans?
I just I'm hosting my open mic that night, and we're gonna have pizza and beer, Three Dead Moose. But you know that's
Can
for
I
the
co-host
comics.
With you.
John Margulewski's co-hosting,
right.
But
that's fine. I'm your best friend. Didn't ask me. That's fine. That's the worst.
Oh man!
When you find out you've been snubbed for a
or hosting an open mic?
For another comic.
Well, why don't you come by and do it anyway, you know?
I was going to. this is just a charade.
I love it. All right, let's get to some of these texts. Ready?
Yeah.
312. The worst is people who have a collage of pictures of themselves as their screensaver.
Ooh,
second
collage.
Second worst, the word collage.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
I don't.
Very confusing with college.
Right. But. Okay.
It is right. There's one letter.
Yeah. Right. And you get foliage in there. Forget it.
Mary says the worst is trying to. Yeah, right. The worst is trying to match everyone else's enthusiasm at an event that you don't want to be at.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You know what's crazy about that, too, Mary, is they're all faking it, you know? Yeah, and everybody's just trying to outdo each other and be as excited.
And then when everyone fakes it together, and then that's when it's a good event.
Yeah, you know what it is? There's one freak that's excited. There's one freak in there.
Yeah, there is
There's
a freak.
One freak in there.
There's
getting everybody
one freak
jazzed.
That feeds the party.
Yep. He's going in there like a freak shark, getting everybody's energy all amped up, and then everybody has to fake it back extra hard.
The guy in Ghostbusters.
Rick Moranis. Yeah.
We got to get her some pizza.
He was the freak. He was the party freak.
He was a party freak.
And then he turned into...
Let's play some Parcheesi.
Right. Yeah. And everybody loved him or hated him.
It's exhausting. Yeah.
He was exhausting.
Let's try JoJo. JoJo, what's the worst, JoJo?
Getting shingles and being off of work for 15 days.
Ooh, you got shingles and you're off of work for 15 days.
I just went back to work. I was off for 15 days.
That's terrible, JoJo.
Oh,
and I think I want to reiterate to everybody that the worst could be a lot of different things. It doesn't have to be your ailments.
I thought they said single, and I was like, oh, that is the worst. You know?
I was thinking she was on a roof.
No, shingles is like a form of chicken
pox. Yeah, we know. It's awful.
It's in all of us.
The pain can last for 6 months to who knows how many years as you get older.
Don't read the WebMD, JoJo.
Yeah,
Thank you for calling in.
You'll be okay, honey. Well, God bless.
Well, you know, that's the thing is you get
shingles.
What I found with the worst is you get trends or like themes.
Yeah.
So someone picks up right away. Oh, so she probably heard our first woman, Teresa, and say, oh, broken foot. I can top that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's where we go.
Pretty soon, we're going to have some real sad stories.
If I would have started with, oh, you know, it's the worst guys who don't turn their turn signal on. Then it'd be all farts.
Yeah.
Right? That's just the way it
is. Let's change the tides. Farty, fart, fart, fart.
Let's try some others.
Anybody lost?
How about
a
this
leg?
One?
Everybody feel good? That's the worst.
506 says, when your 4-year-old daughter has a stronger grip and bonus points, her fingers. I don't know if that's all I got, her fingers.
Huh.
Let's see. The worst is having... Oh, I see. I read it out of context. Right?
Oh,
506,
okay.
The worst is shaking hands with Mr. Clammy Hands.
Oh,
or limpy wrists.
My four-year-old daughter has a stronger grip. A weak handshake will gross me out in a way that, like, if you just, like, I will hold somebody's hand, but if you just touch my inside of my palm, if you just touch my hand with your hand, I want to shower. It is so gross. I'll never look at you the same way again.
If it's not a firm handshake, it's like a done deal.
Full contact, wrap the fingers. What is this brushing my palm stuff?
I had a six month flirtation with a limp handshake. Like I went there. Like it was like a stylized thing where I changed my handshake and went limp. Not as a bit or anything, but I just thought it'd be more sensitive. And then it was someone was like, that's a terrible handshake.
Yeah.
Like someone called me out face to face.
It gives me a
firm handshake.
Yeah. The willies.
I don't trust it.
Not like grab them and knock them over firm, you know, but
no,
like,
but it's, there's something that is trustworthy in a firm handshake for me.
Also, I can't imagine you doing what I'm thinking of, which feels like a wet paper towel, like, you know?
Yeah, like a noodle hand.
Yeah, like a lasagna noodle just like draped on my palm. Yeah.
Yeah. No sauce.
734 says, you know, it's the worst. Your wife's dad makes some homebrew and it's bad, but you have to drink it.
Oh, yeah.
Like stuck with a bunch of stuff that you don't want to drink.
Yeah.
And then the pressure of an in-law, like, you liking my
Staring
brew?
Staring you down.
Yeah. Mm. How's it tasting? Yeah, that sucks.
But you can get out of that. You can get out of that by just sipping it and going, you know, I feel it's good, but you know what it's missing is that, what do you call that, flavor. Like you're just
yeah, and then you know, like and, he hates you forever.
Yeah, I guess you gotta
quit drinking. Yeah. You know, that's a way out of it.
Yeah, tell
him. You know, be like, I don't drink anymore.
Tell him you're going on a carb.
Tell him you're pregnant.
Low carb.
A juice cleanse or a pregnancy, yeah. Right?
Tell him you have to drink wine for your heart.
Yeah, switch to wine anyway.
Switch to wine. It's healthier.
Maybe that's what you can do. 312 says the worst hard licorice.
Oh, yeah.
Hard licorice?
Or soft, and I don't know.
Hard licorice?
Licorice?
Just harder licorice? Like, I mean, I know.
Like, if it's
black
too hard,
and red, right?
I know. That's what I.
Yeah. Like, you love
licorice.
I
didn't know there was other
hard
categories.
Is there a texture difference? Yeah. I guess I know. I mean,
I know the ropey kind.
Like, jujube hard or yeah, like right. Hard candy hard?
Of course, you gotta say jujube.
Such a weird word, right?
I mean, they're very a tough. They're a tough.
But they're
gummy.
Tough, right?
That's gonna be a gummy. Great pun joke for her in 2 days with the punchline jujube.
A strange word for a candy.
I'm thinking of it already.
No, now you know when people put pressure on you to make puns. That's the worst.
Rena Kalm and Kristen Toomey are in studio tonight. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, get the news from Rob Martier, and then we'll continue with the second half of the worst. Oh, that's right. We've got about 2 minutes here before you guys are. They're enjoying. All right, I got more we can go to. We've got 2 minutes. I forgot we don't have a break up until the news here. here we go. 518 says the worst knuckle cracking.
Oh, yeah. I've never been able to.
I enjoy a thumb crack.
I've never been able
right
to crack
here.
My knuckles.
You're going to do it?
And then, yeah, just to piss that guy off. No. no. Yeah, but... You know what? I do agree with him on some level because some people take it like extreme
yeah,
it's where
it's like all 10.
And it's like all yeah. at the same time. And it's like
it's too much.
Yeah. And it grosses me out. I only like my own in the privacy of my home.
Well, how about the people that start at the fingers, then do the neck, then do the back, then
routine.
They do their hips.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like this whole regimen of cracking everything in their body.
Yeah. I like doing my feet. I crack my feet in
oh,
the morning.
Oh, I hate that.
I just stretch them and they crack.
You know what's the worst? My husband will, like, he has ankle issues, so he'll turn his ankle.
Oh, and it, like, makes noise.
And it, like, clicks and cracks and makes noises, and it, like, sends chills. I'm like, please stop. It's like it hurts me.
I agree with Rob. The routine, like that, I have to crack every place that can crack in my body in one shot. That's too much. That's the worst.
Now I feel like I need my back cracked, my neck cracked. I'm like, I could go for good cracking.
What's cracking?
What's crack-a-lackin'?
All right. 312-981-7200. Well, Rena Kalm and Kristen Toomey in studio. We're going to take a break to get to Rob's news here, and we'll come back. We'll do the second half of the worst. We are complaining about the worst things in society for prizes.
It's going down, y'all. The worst come, my people's come first.
You know
the deal. The worst come, the worst. When worst come, the worst my people's come first.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200. Rena Kalm, Kristen Toomey in studio. Rena has a show. She does Top 10 Tuesdays at the Laugh Factory. Kristen's got two big shows coming up. She's doing Savage Love Live at the Music Box next Thursday, and she's also going to be doing two shows at the Women's Chicago Women's Funny Festival. I got it.
You nailed it.
That took me a second.
Yeah, you nailed
That's Friday and Saturday next week. All right, so we got a lot of good stuff, and hopefully it'll veer away from... debilitating ailments.
Yeah.
Right? That's where we had the first half, and but we're going to go right at it. 773's got dating issues. I don't even know if this is dating. You guys can break this down. The worst is when 773 says, the worst is when you've been talking to a girl on Tinder, okay, and then she gets into your Uber. This guy's so tech savvy.
Yeah, this is so millennial.
And
my
turns
goodness.
Out that you went from being great to having nothing in common.
I can't relate at all, but you totally can, I'm sure, because you used to drive for Uber.
I used to drive for Uber. I've never met anybody off of Tinder, but I've driven for Uber.
So. You just know what those, you know those words, yeah.
Yeah, I know those words. I know that you're kind of probably crazy if you expect anything good to happen from Tinder or Uber, really. I mean, you can hope you get to where you're going in one piece.
Right.
But
I don't know how those two things interact in the situation. Did they having a great conversation or like, I'll get an Uber and I'll come pick you up and we'll hang out? Or is the Uber driving? Like, there's a lot going on.
I mean, I've often said I wish they would combine the apps because you only want to do a guy with a car. You know what I mean? But it's not really... I don't know. I guess. Was it an... I would think that, you know what? Forget Tinder. Forget Tinder. Save some money and just stick with Uber Pool and see what falls in your lap.
See what happens.
Literally.
Yeah. Literally.
Charm.
You know, pile them in there.
Yeah. Pile them in your lap.
There you go.
Love is found in the Uber Pool.
There you go. Uber Pool. Swipe left, right?
Yeah.
Right. I don't know which one it was. 224. The worst is lifting the hood of your two-year-old car, noticing that squirrels got in there and tore the lining off the hood, ate a hole in the washer fluid, and started eating the fuse box.
What kind
of squirrels are these?
Rude.
Whoa.
Like piranhas for land.
That's crazy.
Like Fatal Attraction squirrels.
I'd be scared of running into
that. Sabotaging
them.
This man's vehicle.
What did you do to the squirrels?
I know.
That's
like
payback.
That's like,
so messed
yeah,
up.
Yeah, they remember. They remember what you
There's
did.
Something there, yeah.
I feel just like kind of offended by that anyway, just because like they're not paying taxes. You know what I mean? Like pigeons, squirrels,
right. Rabbits.
Very rude. Right. Rabbits are at least cute. They're real cute.
You're in the wrong space.
But you know,
I can't stand the rabbits right now. They're killing me. They're eating all my flowers.
Oh no. Okay. Well then, you know, screw those rabbits.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
They might as well
I'm
be
joking.
Squirrels with yeah, ears.
Right. 815 says the worst is having arthritis with your swear finger. What is a swear finger?
Ooh, middle finger.
Oh, that's dumb.
What is you shaking your pointer finger?
Yeah, what do you mean swear finger?
That this, seems. I
this
don't know.
Is scolding, clearly scolding finger. Not swear finger.
I mean, a lot to learn.
I mean,
ring finger, pinky, thumb. They all have names. Scolding.
Yeah.
708. Go ahead, Yana.
I think it just seems like, yeah, that's the worst, but maybe it's like, how often do you need to use that? And what else is the worst about your day that you need to use that finger so much?
You need that finger.
Oh, I need this finger. because, you know, I have road rage.
Uh-oh. All right. The worst
not
is
safe
having
on the road.
708 says the worst is having someone pack you for your move, end up with 7 boxes marked kitchen, and none of them also say coffee maker. And over a week now, and I still haven't found it.
Oh my gosh! That's awful. Yeah, a week no coffee maker. That sucks.
Yeah.
Starbucks.
Yeah. 847 says maybe Justin. They were talking about licorice that's old and stale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It becomes hard and you can't chew it. That could be it.
Man, that's, you know,
earlier it was hard licorice.
It started off seeming like that wasn't such a bad thing, but now it's like, I really hate hard licorice.
It's climbing up the top, climbing up the charts.
You know, it grows on you.
Making a move.
It gets stale. Hardens your heart.
Hard licorice is pushing shingles.
Only way it could be worse is if like I tripped on some hard licorice and hurt my leg. Then I would like.
That one's still at the top. Birthday leg is at the top.
Yeah.
Yes.
We give cute nicknames to these texts. Yeah. Birthday leg.
Also, my birthday's shingles. Coming up, like I said, so I really just, yeah. I want.
It's real.
You know, she can't come to my party, so we should get her some pizza.
870 says the worst is wanting a pizza but not coming up with a good lie.
Ha ha.
We can sniff that out. We'll sniff the lies out.
Yeah.
Like we know,
shingles.
We know hard.
She was no.
Oh, you know what I thought? You know what I thought he was saying?
She was real. I'm kidding.
I thought he was saying like, when you were like, I really want to order a pizza right now, but I can't think of a good enough lie to tell myself as a justification for why I should allow it. It's so late. Yeah.
It's so late. I've been on this. Yeah. I've been on this cleanse.
Just because they're open.
I just can't lie to myself.
Yeah. Dairy isn't right for me anymore.
Lie to myself with like an I deserve this. Yeah.
You know what? I haven't deserved it. I've been bad and I keep lying to myself. Now I'm going to get a large. All right. Let's go to Bonnie. Bonnie, what's the worst, Bonnie?
Hi. I think the worst on an upswing since you had some people who had some down things.
Oh, right. Bummers, yeah.
And I feel for those people.
Yes.
You know, you give little names to people. I was Salmonella Bonnie that won last year for a pizza.
I never called you that. I do remember that. I've never called you that. You said, I give names. I've never called you that. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Salmonella. I never called you that.
Never. You cannot prove it. I know.
And a blood clot. And
you,
then
that was all you, or was that was all three?
That
you?
Was all me.
Oh, it
was
man.
Like within
Bonnie.
4 months. I'm fine.
You're fine. And I appreciate you calling in. Okay, what do you got tonight? Please,
what
not another ailment.
Tonight is, there's a guy in my building, and it's just killing me. He works in a very nice department store in retail, in the men's department.
Okay.
And they have to wear cologne. And it has to be something from their store. I don't know what it is, except it as far as I'm concerned, it's rotten eggs because the whole elevator.
Oh, he smells it up.
Oh, no, the elevator.
Is he in commercial real estate? Those guys are the worst.
Oh, wow. What is he thinking?
You got to outstink him, Bonnie.
I have to write him a note.
You got
to
outstink him. That's the thing. You got to show him a lesson.
No. You know, I don't do that. I wouldn't do that to other people.
Yeah, you're nice.
It begs me, but
what are you
going to
do?
What are you going to do? My cheering up.
What are you know
what are you
going to
do?
You know what I said? You know what? It's kind of a less, I don't know, less aggressive form of revenge. Maybe just leave him some hard licorice and see what that does to him.
Oh, well.
That'll really piss him off,
a message. Apparently. That's like a mafia message.
Yeah.
You
know? Oh, hard really? Licorice under your pillow.
Or like a dead fish rolled in a newspaper.
Oh, wow, it got real.
That,
wow,
you wear a horse head.
There you go. Okay. Thanks, Bonnie.
No, I'm going to write him a nice little note and say, I don't want to hurt your feelings. You're killing me.
You're killing me. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but you're killing me.
Great, Bonnie. Thank you, Bonnie. All right, the 630 says, that's good stuff. The worst is being new in your job and going out of the way to say good morning, Paul, to the company VP, only to realize afterwards his name is Andy.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
That's an ouch moment.
Oh, yeah. Man. No, you know what, though? It's probably feels better than the other way because it's kind of a power move, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
It is.
Yeah.
And then they hate you, though.
Right. If the other way, you're
either
not important.
Either they respect it or they hate it.
That you're going to...
Depends on the person.
However long you're there, he's going to remember you because, you know, you called him, had the nerve. Call him Andy.
You called him Paul. Nerve. His name was Andy.
Yeah. Or Paul, yeah. Mm-hmm. See, I can't even get it right.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you should get a more memorable name. I don't know.
The worst is moving in with someone. All right, here we go. 312. The worst is moving in with someone who doesn't share the same values as you. Wow.
Well,
for example, my girlfriend is anti-microwave.
What?
Do you know how tough it is to live with that?
Yeah, if you like baked potatoes, forget it.
Yeah.
I mean,
deal breaker.
I think it's the worst. That's a value. Yeah.
That is like a value.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I actually
could be anti-microwave.
I don't know. I didn't know that that was a movement.
Yeah, I didn't either.
But yeah, that's a weird value. You know,
here's
it's like politics, everything great, same amount of kids, but
microwave,
you know, microwave deal breaker.
Yeah, put it in the garage. You know, put one in the garage for you. And have a hot pocket. Calm down.
Just hide it. Hide it in the yard.
Have a hot pocket. Calm down.
Do a battery-powered microwave.
Go to a gas station. Yeah, they got microwaves.
There you go. Where are you going? Oh, I'm just going to a gas station.
Yeah.
Why do you
smell like
dinner?
Cheese?
Yeah.
Whenever you come home, you smell like a hot pocket.
630. The worst is people who make a status update to say happy birthday to their prepubescent child. If a person was to randomly walk up to someone in real life and say happy birthday to my kid, they would be branded a psychopath, so it should be the same on Facebook. So when they say happy birthday to someone who's not on Facebook, I guess that's the idea. Like if you have a 2-year-old, like, happy birthday, Tyler.
Yeah, I don't think that's the worst.
No, I think it's also, yeah, like.
Like it's just like, hey, showing like love.
I wouldn't know because like the kids aren't on Facebook, so I wouldn't know it was some of my friends' kids' birthdays unless they posted. But I'm also saying that to be nice because Toomey posts about her kids. I'm just kidding.
I'm looking at you like, I wish you would say something.
I wish you would.
I wish you would.
That's the name of the new segment. I wish
and
you
I
would.
And I love every single one of them. I do every time.
Every post.
Kristen Toomey, Rena Kalm in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst.
It's going down, y'all.
Rena Kalm, Kristen Toomey playing the worst tonight. 312-981-7200. Having a lot of fun, you guys. This is a good way to wrap up. A long day, but this is I always love it. And having you guys in the studio, I love it. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. So the worst, 773 says, a person with road rage deciding to become an Uber driver.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, bad
choice.
That's
a bad choice.
Yeah.
Take a yoga
terrible
class
choice.
Or something.
Having to go to the bathroom and the public toilet's disgusting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The worst is coming home from work and having to park a half a block away from your house because the people across the street have 8 cars. and a driveway. And they don't park any of the cars in the driveway because they have a hammock there.
Oh my god. Text us the address. Yes.
We're coming over for the party. Yes. A hammock party.
Oh, yeah. I would set that hammock on fire if I lived there.
I don't know. I'm kind of
I'm not encouraging that. I'm just saying that's what I would have done.
I'm very interested in a hammock driveway. Like, I want to know what this is like.
Yeah,
now.
Well, how big is this hammock? It takes up the whole driveway? And who, where do they, why do they have eight cars?
It must be a small driveway.
How many people?
A lot of trees and stuff.
I have a lot of questions about this property.
I know, right? It's very intriguing. It's an intriguing worst. Always good to have those.
Yeah.
630 says Violetta Padromedic, who does the traffic for a Rokan show, she's anti-microwave.
Hmm.
I didn't know that. I don't know if this is true. She doesn't have one.
Okay.
But there might be a difference between anti-microwave and not having a microwave.
Yeah, I didn't have a microwave for 3 years a couple of years ago, and it was fine. We were fine without it
because
we don't really use it. But we don't really use the microwave. But I'm not an anti-microwave person.
I am anti-cooking microwave popcorn at home. I am anti that because it
does... The smell.
Never works. It smells the worst.
Making it on the stove is so much better. But
224 says, who microwaves baked potatoes?
They're 5 minutes as opposed to like an hour.
Yeah,
they don't taste as good. I'm not, you know, but I'm just saying it's possible.
Yeah, way too much judgment there.
Yeah.
708. Jeez, 224. All right, 214 says the worst.
My feelings are the worst
is limpy, drippy, droopy bacon.
Yeah.
Like one of those handshakes, but in bacon form.
Oh, yeah. It's a bacon, a handshake.
Bacon handshake.
Oh, it's a meek bacon handshake.
Yeah. Meek bacon.
Meek bacon.
I honestly, I don't eat bacon because I was raised weird. No, just Jewish. But also weird, but that's a separate thing.
Right.
I have never liked bacon, and I have to apologize for that a lot. But I will say that I would eat it if it was like really crispy. But if you're talking about wet bacon or like whatever.
That's the worst.
I think you're all crazy.
That might be an honorable mention.
Yeah.
312, the worst is when you're riding the L feeling sucky and alone. That's a big part of this. When a young couple gets on and starts with the PDAs right in front of you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've been there.
Really?
You should try Uber Pool, wink, wink.
This is can't they go on and say, really? I can see you and your tongues.
Ew.
Get a back seat in your dad's Buick and leave me alone.
You know what? You know what? For me, it's not
even witnessing. What just happened?
He's mad.
He's talking to the couple.
He's talking to the couple.
Oh, what did he say again?
He said, I can see you and your tongues.
Ew.
Get a back seat in your dad's Buick and leave me the hell alone.
Yeah, see, like, get off the train.
It's one thing to see a PDA, but to hear another human's mouth sounds... I'll say this, you know what's the worst? I had to share a room with somebody who snored when they were awake all weekend.
What? You're not saying that on the radio.
Yeah.
Aren't you guys
say his name.
Oh my God. No. What the worst was last night, what happened in front of the Logan Theater.
Oh my God. We just saved all this for the end. It was awful. Right, this dude, I'm sitting right there outside of the theater, and this dude just comes out of the theater with his
girl. Battering everywhere.
I'm just like, go to an alley. Gross. Like something.
Some discretion,
like,
right.
So then she was like yelling at this guy.
Well, nasty to me.
And Marina's like, you're a disgusting.
Yeah.
And then she said something. He was getting in the car and she was yelling.
I said, don't get hit by a car. You're too ugly for a funeral.
You said that. That's a good line. Don't get into a crazy street tiff with a comedian, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then the cops came and they didn't do anything.
One time that happened to me where I was upstairs in my third floor apartment, and I was looking down, and this guy decided he's going to just throw the window open. I go, hey, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
Fight. And hilariously, and I learned my lesson from this point on, he looked up at me as he was zipping up, and he goes, I'm coming to get you. I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
And he's like knocking on the door down there, and I'm like, well, that did not go the way I thought it was going to go.
I kept thinking, oh, they're going to come back around and like, you know. And
no,
I was like, we gotta get out of here.
Drove him away. I knew that he
was. I didn't know he
back.
Was with his girlfriend.
But at least he was relieved. So,
Oh my God, so gross.
Gross.
Yeah.
All right. 312 said, yes, I did mean stale licorice.
Thank you. Mystery solved.
Is that still the worst, though? The worst?
Old licorice.
No, I just remembered that guy snoring all weekend. He's the worst.
Yeah.
All right. The worst is when you try to open a new jar of pickles, but you can't, and someone comes along like your wife, and she says, "Step aside. Let me try," and she opens it first shot. Then she proceeds to take all the credit while your Teenage Mutant son plays Blackhawks PA announcer and bellows, "Tonight's pickle jar has been opened by Wonder Woman, unassisted, 8:15, 45 seconds.
I'm sorry, real quick. Did you say Teenage Mutant son?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know about that, but I think that was like a Cosby episode that I saw.
I feel like, yeah, that might have.
Oh, you loosened it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, where she shook it and then popped it on the end, because that's how I learned. Yeah, I learned how to open a pickle jar from the Cosby Show, so I know what it is.
708 says, we'll get these in real quick. The worst is
my parents didn't teach me things.
When you're really excited about your meal, and on your first bite you burn your tongue so bad you can't taste the rest of it.
Oh, yeah.
The worst then is sitting on the next to a belligerent drunk on the bus while he's talking to his equally belligerent invisible friend.
I like that. That's a good time.
It's not like they're making out. Relax.
I mean, it's better than him talking to you.
Right.
Yeah. No, first, that's a free show.
And then that's a free show. Yeah. Right. Totally. And, you know, it's real to him.
So long as they don't smell like burnt eggs or rotten eggs or
they're,
making out.
Covered completely. And
all right. Here's the last one. The worst is when I finish my French fries at a restaurant and I discreetly stick my finger in the little ketchup container to lick up all the remaining ketchupy goodness, and I get dirty looks from the people at the next table and my wife.
And face right now, sir.
I mean, here's the deal. There's going to be more ketchup.
Now.
That's not a thing that you're like, I got to get every last bit of this ketchup. Ugh. How many ketchup packets have I thrown away because they were in a bag that I didn't need anymore?
I cannot.
You are going to have more ketchup. You don't need to lick your finger in public because there's extra ketchup.
They give ketchup away.
Yeah, they do. All right, here we go. We're giving away two pizzas, a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. We also have a complimentary pass for two adults and two children. General admission to the Sycamore Speedway this 2017 race season. Sycamore Speedway, the Midwest's finest clay track and family-owned since 1960. Visit sycamorespeedway.com. Pretty cool. All right, here we go. So
ketchup.
Third place, and we will give let's go ahead. Why don't we go ahead and do this? Why don't we go ahead and give the Sycamore race pack to the...
What's the Sycamore race pack?
I just read it.
Oh.
Totally not even
I was still thinking about
the
ketchup, man. I
know,
can't
I'm
handle
stuck on that
ketchup. You're stuck on it too, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. That's really bothering
me. 224 says... The Sycamore Speedway is going to go to 224 says the worst is lifting the hood of your two-year-old car and noticing squirrels got in it and tore the lining off the hood, ate a hole in the washer fluid, and started to eat the fuse box.
Yeah, like, is there even an insurance for that?
No, probably not, especially, and that's not covered under warranty.
Enjoy watching cars that work on a track.
Harsh.
That's so harsh.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And then we're going to go 312, get second place tonight, and we're going to have to do it. We'll go with hard licorice.
Yeah
first. Which we found out later is stale licorice.
Yeah, but we made a lot out of it.
I think at this point, I like hard licorice better than ketchup, so it's
They'll get a pizza. And pizza for first place tonight has to go to our first caller tonight, Teresa, who broke her leg right before her birthday.
Oh, my Gemini friend. I hope you heal fast.
And it all had to do with Rena, because Rena feels bad because her birthday's coming up.
It's about me. I enjoy the worst, you know?
Guys, this was fun. This was so fun.
Thank you.
You can see Kristen Toomey. She's going to be with Dan Savage at Savage Love Live at the Music Box next Thursday. She's also at the Chicago Women's Funny Festival. It doesn't roll out. I need it to roll off the tongue down a hill.
Yeah.
Chicago Women's Funny Festival. That is next Friday and Saturday, right?
Yeah, it's stage 773.
You got it. And then, of course, Rena Kalm will be top 10 Tuesdays at the Laugh Factory. You can see her all over town. You guys, thanks so much for coming in. Great job tonight.
Thank you. This is so fun.